This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. It is a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. As the Jets try to make it two in a row, improve on their 1-2 record. In Vancouver, taking on the Canucks. Extended coverage today because of the late start. The afternoon ride with Husser and Rick Ralph will go from 3 till 7. Kevin Hrushevsky will have a two-hour Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show till 9 o'clock when the puck drops with Mr. Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns right here on TSN 1290. And then Hrushevsky and friends will have the Huron Windows postgame show. Extensive coverage teeing up the game today as well right here on the Big Show. Jets D-man Josh Morrissey's going to join us. Dennis Bayak, the face of the Jets on TSN 3 and one of the voices here on 1290, will be around as well. Tyler Dello from The Athletic. Jeff Reinbold, David Pagnata. We're going to qualify two people for Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're going to talk about the Bombers. Matt Nichols spoke with the media yesterday. Seems to be fine. Doesn't like wearing a glove, but we'll see what happens. NHL news and notes and an hour of your phone calls as well. Jim Tilth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Gentlemen, how are we? We all like pizza? Do you eat pizza?
Once in a while, I eat pizza. The young, you know, kids in the house love it, so we are often going to pick up pizza for the monkeys. But for me, yeah, every once in a while, I don't mind it. Just enjoying this weather, brother. Guys, like, these are the days, right? You need to be very aware of how fortunate we are with this weather and breathe it all in every second you got, man. Enjoy it.
Yeah, I thought that as I watched the entirety of both baseball games yesterday. Oh, it's pretty nice outside.
I went down to Bomber practice yesterday just to check it out, see what Nichols is doing, get a look at that hand, and I had my flip-flops on and a big jacket, and I got roasted. Flip-flops and a jacket?
That's a good look.
I think so.
Yeah.
Of course, nobody's ever accused me of looking good, so. Gene Dunn, David Asper, and Terrence Edwards, the receiver, who was down at practice as well, went into the Blue Bomber Hall of Fame last night.
That's really cool. Dunn, Asper were both big time associated with the team during my time there. A couple of real cool cats who basically bleed blue and gold. And Terrence Edwards, of course, sort of the guy to follow Milt's footsteps in a way, huh, with the team. Like, and just a real top shelf guy. Three great guys there.
Clarence Denmark talking about all that Terrence Edwards did for him, much like Milt Stegall did for Terrence Edwards, the old pay it forward for young rookie receivers. Jets game day, gentlemen, same lineup. We'll get into the whole fishing, Dustin Byfuglien injury, Matt Hendricks, all that stuff. But we'll start with Connor Hellebuyck getting the tap. And I admit fully that I kind of thought they'd go back to Mason. But again, I've been very forward with my thinking that Paul Maurice is sort of, well, as he said, we're not waiting 3 weeks, game by game. We need everybody sort of thing going with the hot hand of Connor Hellebuyck. Your thoughts on the decision to start Hellebuyck once again?
Well, to me, I said if they go with Hellebuyck yesterday, I said that then I think it's, you know, people that have this notion that Steve Mason is the starting goalie and that's all there is to it. I think you need to sort of change your understanding of what the organizational view is, where maybe this is a little bit more of not a competition, but just something closer to a platoon-type situation where Connor Hellebuyck can force the hand to make it a platoon type of a situation or steal away X number. Like, for instance, if you think Connor Hellebuyck doesn't go light it up tonight, you think he doesn't get start the next game? I think absolutely he does. If he plays a strong game and the Jets end up winning, I would expect Connor Hellebuyck to start again. So I think that's great, right? You're challenging both the goalies at that point in time. And I think that it ultimately makes both of them better in keeping their game as sharp as possible and ultimately helps the team out.
Yeah, and when you take into account how the first two games of the season went, you kind of almost pigeonholed yourself into moving forward like this for the time being, where you have to play Hellebuyck again. You have to go with the hot hand. And how long that lasts, at this point, it's up to the youngster. You know, if he keeps playing good, then there's no reason for them to really change anything. So I don't know if it necessarily changes the way the Jets view their goaltending situation moving forward. But in the meantime and in the near future, they kind of have been forced into, if the kid keeps winning, we can't really take him out right now at this point. I don't think it necessarily means you give up on Steve Mason right off the bat. But
and I don't think it's related to winning. In fact, I hope it's not related to winning. For instance, if the Jets win tonight 5-4, and if Connor Hellebuyck doesn't play well, that's not good enough. I think that certainly you can break down that one position and say, hey, did Connor Hellebuyck have a solid game tonight? Did he look strong, that big, strong, and soft, big square and soft sort of thing? And then if that's the case, go forward. If Connor Hellebuyck doesn't play well tonight and the Jets end up pulling out a 5-4 victory, then I hope they switch to Steve Mason. We need to remember, and I refuse to accept some of the narrative out there from people that don't spend a lot of time watching Jets games that Steve Mason struggled in the first couple of games. So I think it's imperative for Hellebuyck to play a real sharp game if he wants the crease again next time around.
So what if, the counterpoint to that is Mason plays really well and they lose 2-1?
Well, you keep him in there. It does not, to me, it has nothing to do with the winning and the losing. It is what level of play are you getting from that individual. It's the same thing with guys out in front of the blue paint. Right? No, when we evaluate defensemen and forwards, no one talks about winning or losing. It doesn't matter. What did that guy specifically do within his roles and responsibility for the team?
I don't actually know. I thought he was going to tap Mason again because the team played better and said, well, you know, they didn't play well in front of either two guys. I'm not upset with it. I think it's, hey, they need to win every game. Go with the hot goalie. Connor Hellebuyck played really well. I don't know what the thinking is and will be throughout the season. I honestly thought they would tap Mason.
Yeah. You wonder what it would take for Mace to get back into the starting lineup. And you know what? Hellebuyck could play good, and maybe you go back with him on Saturday night against Carolina. I don't know. I think at this point it really depends on how well Connor Hellebuyck plays. And if he's playing, if he has another game similar to what we saw in Edmonton, and I think we're all kind of in agreement here that Steve Mason, the numbers don't look good at all, but the play didn't match the numbers. You know, if Hellebuyck keeps stopping 35, 37, and giving up two a game, I don't see a problem with just kind of letting that play out, and then once that hot streak comes to an end, then you can go back to Steve Mason and allow him to run with the crease for a little bit if he's able to, you know, not necessarily play better, but maybe have the numbers more so match the level of play he had given you in that.
This is a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Canucks on the station tonight at 9. Extended full coverage on TSN 1290 as well. Jim,
nine.
Troy, and Brandon.
9, huh?
9 bells.
Woo!
You
that's
have a
late
nap
one,
today?
Boys. OT.
Exactly.
And it goes into OT,
that's
baby.
A Red Bull Tim Horton morning, I can tell already.
Exactly. Yeah. 3 years from now, that game will start from this time right now for us.
Yeah.
What else are you looking forward to? The lineup's going to be the same. Joel Armia will not draw back in. And the Vancouver Canucks are an interesting team. What else are you expecting? I mean, from the Jets, is it as simple as just the same consistent play, build on what you did against the Oilers, or are you looking for something more? And before we get to that, the lines are the same too. Ehlers with Scheifele and Wheeler, Perreault with Little and Laine, Mathias with Lowry and Tanev, Patan with Kopp and Dano, Morrissey, Trouba, Enstrom, Pullman, Kulikov, Myers, and as we said, Hellebuyck gets the start.
To me, this Vancouver has done very little. I know they beat Edmonton, but as far as a team that's generating things, Vancouver's doing very little right now. They're in fact, they're only second worst in the league right now for shots per game at 27. They're allowing 38.5 against, so massive discrepancy there. This is a team you should be able to go in and take full advantage of. Just go and we talked about this yesterday. If the Winnipeg Jets are vying for a playoff spot, if they are going to either take that step or grow into that team that everyone's waiting for, you don't crap the bed when you stroll into Vancouver here. This is one of those. There's not many of the teams sort of like Vancouver right now. There's maybe five. You know, you point out a couple in the West. You want to start talking West, you can talk Arizona. You talk Vegas when the opportunity comes. I think Vancouver sits in that sort of spot. Everyone's still thinking that likely Colorado will eventually sift down to there. But there are lesser thans that exist in the Western Conference. Vancouver, the Vancouver Canucks are one of them, and you have to make hay and grab these points.
Yeah, they're not a pushover. They're not a free spot on the bingo card. But everything Troy said is right. You just, and not only that, but you erase every single bit of goodwill you earned in that Edmonton win. If you go in and realistically, outside of Markstrom and Nielsen putting up a 45-50 save performance, like you, everything you did will be undone in an instant, and then you immediately kind of go back to the panic button.
The uh-oh button.
Yeah, after 60 minutes. So, yeah, this is a game the Jets need to take advantage of. And not only that, but, I mean, you look at who some of the players are for Vancouver, and especially up front. And according to Roster Resource, Alex Bobrovsky's their third-line center. Well, I mean, if you can't take advantage of that,
say,
something
yeah,
we've seen here in Winnipeg.
I was going to add into that, he's getting more ice time than the Sedins. Like, it's different times in Vancouver. Travis Green has taken over. Former Moose captain Nolan Baumgartner's on the bench with him. And they're not happy with Bermistroff's play, but yet he's playing more than the Sedins.
We just leave some dead air there to let that sink in.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's so, and this is what I was looking towards the game, is exactly what you guys are touching on. We talked about how well they did in the Central, and that could change this year. Those are going to be battles, the East, all that stuff. But these are the games. The Arizonas, I don't want to take anything away from Vegas or 3-0, but I will. The Vegases, the Colorados, the Vancouvers, you need to get your point and your full 2 points, not just one. I know it's a road game and all that other stuff, but this is another next step for this team in a season where we all think they should take a next step. This is one of them, to go into Vancouver and get the 2 points.
No question about it.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll hear from Paul Maurice on the lineup, why Connor Hellebuck, and he has no problem with a couple guys going fishing. That's next on The Big Show on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Canucks puck drop right here on the station at 9 p.m. tonight. Jim, Troy, and Brandon. The only player not on the ice at practice for the Winnipeg Jets at UBC yesterday was Dustin Byfuglien. He didn't skate on Sunday in Edmonton. He didn't take the pregame skate Monday versus the Oilers. After the game, they said lower body injury. They traveled to Vancouver, had a day off. And on that day off, Matt Hendricks and Dustin Byfuglien went sturgeon fishing. And I know I don't know my fish species, but looked like they caught a whale, a massive whale, a sturgeon. And then, of course, we were talking about it yesterday, and the whispers about whether Dustin Bufflin's actually hurt, didn't play well the first two games. They didn't skate again yesterday, and he will take the morning skate today. Paul Maurice said it's a soft tissue issue. But he will not play tonight again. First of all, your thoughts, just to clarify, on the fishing picture. How do you feel about that?
About as stupid as you can be if you're Dustin Byfuglien. And I don't believe Paul Maurice saying that he's got no problem with it. I just don't believe that. You got a soft tissue issue. Now, lower body, so you could waist down, right? So anywhere in the air, hips, groin, hamstring, quad, who knows where it is. Anyone that's ever been injured before, and you're freaking fishing for sturgeon, and he's in a river, walking in a riverbed, has the hip waders on, all the rest of it. So you're on unstable ground. You hook into a 12-foot sturgeon. Hello, people. This isn't perch fishing from a boat where you're sitting in a boat. You think your active body, lower body's active, trying to haul in a massive sturgeon, for crying out loud? Like, what the? He's got a soft tissue issue, and he's out hunting lunkers. And I don't know if he caught one, whether he caught one or not. I don't know if it was him or Hendricks that caught one. I think it's great he's out there with Hendricks. And, of course, we all know the dedication mindset of Hendricks and that whole thing. It's great building relationship there. But just from an aesthetic standpoint, from a PR perspective for an organization, you don't want a guy who's injured getting a photo out in the river. But I just don't – and if he is hurt, this really makes me wonder now what the hell's going on with this. A soft tissue issue, and you're out fishing 300-400-pound fish like that. And if you – anyone that's been injured before, if you have any muscle tweak, anywhere in your body, and if you're doing something where you flex, like you need to call your inside, like to tighten up and use your core to do something, that hurts, man. That hurts whatever muscle you've tweaked to some degree. For sure it does. So I don't get this at all. And there's no way in hell Paul Maurice, I think, is okay with Dustin Byfuglien. He might be okay with Dustin Byfuglien fishing. There is no way the organization is all that thrilled about having a picture of it and putting it out there for everyone to consume when Dustin Byfuglien's being presented as being injured.
How do you feel about Matt Hendricks being injured and doing it?
What's he injured with? I don't know that Matt Hendricks is injured. Is he injured?
Yes, he's been injured since training camp.
Well, I don't know what his...
He's on the IR, actually. He's on the injured reserve list, which means he's been injured for a while.
I don't know what his injury is. And he wasn't playing with the Jets and sitting out. So the thing with Dustin Byfuglien, when you're playing, you're being told that you're injured, not playing, like either of those guys, it's strange. If you're nursing an injury and chasing... You saw the size of that thing. Anyone... And those things fight forever. I mean, that's you are engrossed completely from a physical standpoint in trying to bring in one of those fish. So I don't, you know, whatever Hendricks, I don't know if he is injured. Who knows?
Well, he is injured. He's on the NHL injured reserve list, so he is injured. He's been injured for over a week. When you go on the injured reserve list, it means you're going to be injured for more than 7 days.
Okay, but I don't know, like how, you know, whatever he's injured with, how are you fishing for sturgeon and using every muscle you got in your body to haul in a 12-foot fish?
What do you think about it?
Well, it's just not smart. No matter what way you look at it, it's just not a smart thing to do. And even if you do it, like Troy said, don't make sure you don't get the pictures out there, right? Like you know ahead of time that if you catch a 12-footer, the company that you're paying to help you out with is probably going to post something online. And you should have the foresight to look at that and say, you know what, you guys can't, let's just keep this one under wraps here. It's just, and so it's not smart to let the picture get out. It's not smart to do it either. If you're hurt, Hendricks and Buff, you shouldn't be out there catching 12-foot, 300, 400-pound fish. I know you might want to, and it's your only chance possibly to get out there and do that this year, but you're willing to risk injury for it? It's just not a good look for either player.
I got to be honest, it caught me a little off guard, but I don't really have a problem with it. If he did his treatment and, I mean, I think they know, I don't know what's taking place on a day off, if you have to go tell the coach what you're doing or not, but I think he went in for treatment and stuff. What I don't get is I agree with you guys, if the Sturgeon Fishing Company put out the photo and Matt Hendricks retweeted it, I would assume because they got fishing for free. Otherwise, I would just say, no, sorry, I don't want our photo taken. Or I would just say, what does this cost? $3K for the day, $5K, here you go. I don't want the promotion of that. So I get the surrounding story of being injured and having your... But if Maurice doesn't have a problem with it, and if he got his treatment, Anyways, we'll hear from Paul Maurice here on when asked if he had a problem. I believe it's Ken Weaver, the Winnipeg Sun, asked him if he had a problem with Dustin Byfuglien going fishing when he was injured.
No, he had treatment. Did what he needed to do. Soft tissue issue. None at all. Just a little bit jealous. But no issue at all.
We understand that if he had an issue, he'd say he didn't have an issue, right?
Well, but I don't know if he would say that. I don't like. I often think sometimes we read too much into this stuff. I mean, well, he went fishing, and I get the idea that if you're injured, you probably shouldn't be. But it's not skydiving. He's not Madison Baumgartner, the San Francisco Giants, going dirt bike riding, and then he blows out his shoulder. Issue is, he's probably been told, like, look, I plan on going fishing. Is that all right? And I don't think somebody said, you know what, this could be, you might not want to do that, and then he did it anyway. I think that he went in and got treatment, and they said, yeah, go ahead.
So if you were the coach and your star player came up to you and said, I know I have a lower body injury, but I want to go catch 400-pound fish, you'd be okay with that?
Well, what's the injury? Like,
lower body.
It's being presented as a soft tissue, which equals muscle or ligament, right? It's like something along those lines.
Well, he's a fisherman too. He could, and I'm just like, trying to look at this from all sides, he could have just went and sat in the boat and watched Matt or Hendricks catch sturgeon because he loves fishing and he goes every day anyway, whenever he can.
I suppose he
could have got out and stood in the river and got his photo with it and said, nice catch, Matt.
Yeah, he could have been.
Interesting.
It's just, it's not interesting to, it's dumb. You, from a PR standpoint, you're putting your organization in a real bad situation, and it makes me think that much more. So, like, he's hurt, huh? Like that's what it does. Everyone sees him out with a huge, massive fish like that. And any, like, I can't even, if you haven't caught a fish big like that, you are completely engaged from a physical standpoint wrestling a fish like that for an hour and a half before you land it. Like, come on, man. And if you got a soft tissue, if that's what it is, I've had all kinds of injuries, seen everything, up and down, all that stuff. You got a soft tissue issue, and you're putting demands on your body like that, you're not helping the healing process.
Speaking of healing, Matt Nichols seems to be healing quite fine with his hand. And by the way, on that, we'll open the Boss Pizza fan line, of course, at 9 if you want to weigh in. We'll take an hour of your phone calls, and we'll hear from Matt Nichols, whose hand seems to be healing just fine in preparations for Saturday's game. Blue Bomber talk next on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to The Big Show on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. Afternoon ride, 3 till 7. Those guys have to work 4 hours today.
Aw.
I know. Should get them something. Leave them some of that pumpkin pie that was on our door the day after we left. You know what I'm saying?
2-3-day-old pumpkin pie?
They'll be on 3 till 7, Rick and Hustler. They were talking about soft tissue, and Rick Ralph posed the question, not being a scientist, isn't there soft tissue in the upper body and the brain as well?
Pretty much all over the place within our bodies, yeah.
See, I didn't even know that. The Manitoba Building Trades pregame show with Kevin Olszewski, 7 till 9, Jets and Canucks tonight at 9, and then, of course, the Huron Windows postgame show. We'll wrap it all up for you. More on the Jets coming up in the next hour, and Josh Morrissey is going to join us. We had to pre-tape yesterday from Vancouver, so we'll have that discussion. Dennis Bayek as well. We're going to talk about the Major League Baseball playoffs and how Westwood jinxed, hexed Cleveland.
The Whiteys!
And now it
Pinstripes and the Astros. I was going to wear my Yankees hat this morning for you.
Do you know what? Like, I think it's a better matchup, but yet there's no way Cleveland should not be in the World Series this year. They are by far the best team in the American League. So now I'm worried that the Yankees are on a heater.
Oh, yeah. And this team, though, they weren't supposed to be anything more than a 500 team, young, you know, emerging for the years ahead. But, oh, baby, they're knocking on the door.
And there's a couple of crazy stats from Cleveland being knocked out. But they were the 23rd team in Major League history to reach 100 wins.
Yeah.
How many made it to the World Series?
None.
Three out of 23 100-win teams have made it to the World Series. They won the World Series.
Not only that, but remember that heater they went on? What did they set the record?
25, I think they made it to.
I thought it was... we'll look that up. But
yeah, and it's bizarre in baseball, though, how it really doesn't mean anything. Like, maybe more so than any other sport.
The ebb and the flow of where you're at as a team.
Yeah, like, it just doesn't matter who you... And I was reading something somewhere where no matter what the matchup is, essentially, playoff teams, when they go up against each other, each series is almost 50-50. So you play 162 and you have the season Cleveland did, and that gets you basically jack squat, even facing the New York Yankees.
Yeah.
Go Yankees!
We'll get into this more, and a really dramatic game between the Cubs and the Nationals. And I think we were duped. I think we were duped by the Nationals and Steven Strasburg. But we'll talk about that in just a bit. The Bombers getting ready to take on the BC Lions. Practiced yesterday, met with the media, and all eyes once again were on Matt Nichols and the glove and the hand and everything else from him. We'll start with Matt Nichols and his work, what he's working on in practice.
Yeah, it's gone good. I feel like throwing the ball well out here, and obviously trying to make sure we're all ready for a big game this week.
And here's Matt Nichols about wearing a glove. He says he doesn't like it, but he sort of has this glove, if you haven't seen it, that has the thumb, the index finger, and the middle finger cut out of it, and the hand that has the nail or not off it. He wouldn't.
It's kind of the opposite of the old Jean-Pierre Paul thing.
Jeez, yeah.
Can we go there yet?
Call the Giants. Can we grab some of those gloves? Yeah.
The Giants are 0-5. Should we be talking about this at 0-5? But yes, it is the opposite of that. He won't talk what the injury is. He won't discuss whether the nails come off or not. He said, I don't think we do that as a team, so I'm not going to weigh in with the specifics of my injury. But he did have this to say about wearing a glove.
Wearing a full glove, which is not something that I plan on doing or I like to do. For me, when I do, when I throw with a glove on, sometimes in the off season, just kind of mess around with it. Yeah, it's definitely, throwing into zones around linebackers, kind of timing throws where I feel like sometimes the index finger just sticks a little bit too much and kind of, tugs it away from where I'm trying to throw it. And it's just not something where, I'm comfortable going into a game. If I, had a glove stick on me and end up in a interception, it's something that I wouldn't, be very happy about. So, I'd rather just go out with, what I'm used to.
Now, I want to ask you this. As a kicker, did you ever wear opposite shoes? Like a kicking shoe and then the other shoe? You know how some field goal
always,
kickers
yeah,
have
always.
A cleat?
Always, always. A plant
other...
foot and a, yeah, always.
So, the optics of this, if it's a matter of even if it makes you uncomfortable, finding a comfortable place with it, or what's the optics of this glove that he clearly doesn't like wearing, but if it is the only way you can play or helps him play, getting comfortable with it over practice heading into the game.
I don't know what you mean by what are the optics of the glove, but the cool thing to me is, and just the way athletes are, how long does he have to wear this glove? I'm not sure. If it's 1, 2, 3 weeks, win, playing pretty well, pretty soon. Like, I would assume even once he's healed, if he does heal during the course of the season, that you would finish the year off with the glove. Like, at some point in time, such a strange contraption, and when you see it, it looks weird, huh?
Yeah.
But and there's, overall and ultimately, there'll be a different feel than what he's used to. But at some point in time, that becomes normalized with him, and you just wonder if once he's healed this year, if he's going to be in the Western Final or Grey Cup or something like that with this kooky-looking glove just because he's gotten used to that with all the practicing. But one thing for sure is, before he left that game last week, he was still – there's all kinds of zip and pep on the ball. So expect him to come out and throw in the pill pretty well against BC. And normally as an athlete, when you have to make a change like this, you get used to it fairly quickly.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at Rip Hamilton with the Pistons. He broke his nose and went to the mask, and that was his staple
mask,
for the
yeah.
rest of his career, right? So who knows? Maybe you see Matt Nichols with a three-fingered glove for the rest of his career. But as long as he's able to grip the ball and throw it fine, to me, it kind of feels like it's more of a pain, man. He's not talking about it, but if he's able to grip the ball fine and throw it fine, then it's just a matter of, probably hurts like hell to throw the ball, and it probably hurts like hell to get hit all the time, especially if it's a fingernail. I mean, I didn't bring this up yesterday, but I destroyed my middle finger one New Year's Eve. And
wait a minute, how?
a couch, literally an entire couch fell on only my middle finger.
Here
and
we go.
My nail basically...
That's
like,
hard
it,
to do.
It basically exploded out of my finger. And
that'll ruin your New Year's.
Yeah, it wasn't fun at all.
Did you stay till midnight, or did you go to the hospital?
I never went to the hospital. I didn't want to go to the hospital. I just kept the finger hidden and kept the party going.
Let's go to the kitchen and tape it to the other finger. Yeah. You'll be fine.
But it was kind of difficult to hold things, but I could still do it. But it just, like you said yesterday with one of your friends, it just hurt like hell.
Yeah,
like everything
I've heard
you did
it described,
just,
if you hit your finger with a hammer, that initial pain is the constant.
Yeah, it's like that every time you do whatever it is you do with your hand. So it could be the same, could be different, but I'm assuming that as long as he's able to have the same velocity, then it's just going to be a tough 3 hours every single time he takes to the field. And as long as he can manage that, and if he plays as he has all season long, then it should be okay. And at that point, you kind of want him to get used to the glove. Like, you kind of want him to be in game situations and have him throwing with that on, because you're probably going to have to go that route for the rest of the season.
Well, and I think that's what he's doing for sure throughout practice, is trying to get used to it, figure it out, and get the proper grip of the ball. So why under the couch? Like, did you lose some change? Did you owe money and somebody
lifted the couch up and had the drink in one hand, didn't want to put it down, couch slip. Whammo.
Eesh.
It's a tough New Year's.
That is I've had worse. That's not a good year. That's not a good way to ring in the new year. Ironically, I did the same thing. Speaking of injuries and going fishing and weather, all this stuff, I did my ankle on a curb on a New Year's Eve, and then 3 days later had a college soccer game, and got the trainer to tape it up, and coach came over during warm-ups, and he said, I hear you got a bad ankle. And I go, no, I'm good, coach. And he said, did you fall? And I said, no. What are you talking about? And he said, well, okay, I'd like you to do a couple wind sprints before practice. And I'm like, I thought we were in this together, you know? Anyway, enough about us. Back to Matt Nichols. That has nothing to do with the finger story at all. I don't know why I go on these tangents. Here's Matt Nichols talking about if it's any question as he wears his gloves and sort of gets accustomed to the ball in practice if he plays on Saturday against the Lions.
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, obviously with anybody, there's always you know, setbacks and things that can happen during a week, but you know, I felt great these couple of days throwing the football around, and you know, fully expect to be playing.
So here's the way I read into fully expect to be playing. It's still we'll wait and see how it goes. But Coach O'Shea talked yesterday as well and said that he looked fine the day before. He looked fine. Is there any question in your guys' mind if he plays on Saturday?
No, I don't read it the way you do whatsoever. This is at this point in time is pain management, right? If there was concern that and wonder as to whether or not there was any other damage going on with the hand, that would have been put to rest by different tests or x-rays that they would have run. And now this is all an issue of pain management, and I guarantee you that he'll be out there playing. And you also, what comes with pain management is you do whatever you got to do. You take whatever you got to take to help lessen the pain. That's part of the game. At that level, that's part of the game.
Yeah, yeah, true. I don't expect him out at all. I think he'll be in. The only way he gets a setback, in my opinion, is if he hits his finger on someone's helmet again. And I'm assuming that the coaching staff is going to go to extreme lengths to make sure that nobody is within 5 yards of Matt Nichols when he makes any sort of a throw this week at practice. So barring some kind of a freak re-injury, he's going to be in there Saturday. And it's good because the Bombers need to get a win before this.
Well, they're not out of the woods,
yeah,
right?
That's what I mean. Like, get a win here to kind of ease any sort of late season slide out of the picture.
And you're like 2 games ahead of Edmonton and Saskatchewan, and you've got 4 games remaining. So you can't be messing around here. You don't want to get all nervous here as an organization needing to, for instance, go into Calgary to win that game to secure second place sort of thing. So you can put things to bed here week 17, week 18, and feel a whole lot more comfortable nearing the end of your season. And then you have the option maybe, you know, if you can go and guarantee that second spot, you can, if you choose to do so, rest players in week 20.
Yeah, and O'Shea was saying, I wanted to talk to you about that too. Like, O'Shea was saying he wouldn't do that. But if they go into Calgary and there's no meaning in the game.
Well, I said I don't like it either. So a lot of coaches like
I
to
don't
do
either,
it. And it's the whole, you know, there's a huge debate to be had, and there's no definite answer. The right thing to do is to play your players. It only becomes a wrong answer if one of them gets hurt in the game that doesn't have any meaning. But as far as maintaining consistency and everyone clipping along at a certain rate, and when you got things cooking, I don't like to infuse interruptions in that. And been on a couple teams that have been hurt by that sort of take. Now, I understand the you know, protecting against injury thing, but there's no correct answer in the balance thing, but certainly I'm of the same mindset, and I hope Mike O'Shea is of the same one too, where you go out, you play, you continue everything, and you just you're still hot and raring to go there come playoff time. Need a quarter to get, especially as an offense, you don't need a quarter to get out there and get going again.
If they have everything clinched by that final week of the season, at most a half, anything other than that is foolish, I think. You're just asking for trouble at that point. I think it's different for a team like Calgary who would have the bye week anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, yeah. Like you're too long and you don't want to – you really don't want to go that way, but
half is good too.
Yeah,
I like a half.
To put
– Get Nichols out of there
to
for
put
the
Nichols
half.
And Harris into the second half of a meaningless game, you're just asking for a world of hurt.
Mr. Harris isn't going to like that if he's sitting at 980.
Yeah, well, I was hide, just going to say well, that.
Fair, but you have to hide Mr. Harris's helmet somewhere at McMahon Stadium, and hey, your cleats aren't anywhere either. And
That's going to be very interesting,
knock
actually.
Knock it on history. You got to let him go.
We'll just he's sitting at 980 and 970. What do you do? That's going to be interesting. Finally, before we leave the Bombers today, Matt Nichols also was asked about bouncing back after the loss to Hamilton and not having consecutive losses yet this season as a team.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a big mantra of ours this year is, good teams always respond after a poor game. And that's what we played last week was a poor game. And I think guys have taken on the challenge and understand that it's a good football team that we've had some big-time battles with the last couple of years. It always come down to the wire, and expect more of the same this week.
Matt Nichols talking about his hand and bouncing back. That is winning teams. When you put up good records, you don't often lose back-to-back games, but the Bombers have made that a note, as most teams do, to come back after a loss like that or any loss in a season to not get consecutive losses going.
And they got this little thing going on with BC a little bit, huh? Go back to last year and then, of course, the playoff loss. There's been some real good battles, and BC is such a strange sort of a situation where Jonathan Jennings, without question, has taken a step back this year, but a very dangerous, like if Jonathan Jennings is tuned in and the BC Lions are ready to go, they're a very dangerous team.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll delve into the Major League Baseball postseason action, and of course, NFL Week 7 starts tonight. Week 6, sorry, starts tonight in the National Football League. We'll talk about that as well. And then back to the Jets on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Gypsum Drywall Interiors present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090. Standard message rates may apply. Every time you do, Gypsum Drywall Interiors will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit TSN1290.ca. Jets game day, Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Canucks tonight on TSN 1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Well, we started with the baseball playoffs already, so let's get into that. Houston and the New York Yankees. Who do you like?
Well, hey, man, I've always had a soft spot for the Yankees since I was a kid and with my sister living there. And then just over the years, and it's what's really I find fascinating. We talked about this last week a little bit, how the sort of the evil empire, they're not really like that anymore, right? Like they don't have a bunch of ridiculously overaged, overpaid guys out there, and they're not built like that. This is a young, exciting group, and arguably led by Aaron Judge, and there's just all kinds of neat little storylines. I'm a big fan of Joe Girardi as well, and he escapes a critical error in Game 2 to ultimately win this series. So I like that whole storyline. But I'm a Yankees fan, so I'll be cheering for the Yankees, and we'll be going tête-à-tête here during the course of this series, Mr. Toth.
That means we will not get along for a week and a half. That might shock some listeners. But, I know you want the Yankees, but who do you like?
I just feel like they're on a sort of a like going a little Blues Brothers here, and they're on a mission from God. If they take down Cleveland with Aaron Judge striking out four times in three games, like the level of struggle from him, right? He didn't really contribute. I like him, so I'm gonna big time go with my heart over my head and the soundness of the Astros here, and look at the Yankees to continue on this magical ride.
Yeah, I don't know if Aaron Judge would have hit a softball last night. He's got some serious, I don't know if it's mental or mechanics, but he's got some major swing issues, which is scary because you beat Cleveland with Judge, what did you have,
sleeping.
two hits in the whole series? Yeah. It's terrifying for both teams there.
Average of .050 in this series.
But the reason I love playoff baseball is that, look at Trey Turner of the Nationals. Outstanding young player. hits the cover off the ball, injured, comes back, hits a cover off the ball, goes four games with nothing, and then hits a big W. So, like, that's what I love about the magic of playoff baseball. He might go the first three games without a hit and seven strikeouts, and then he might just have one game where he hits two bombs. And it's the difference.
Whose bullpen do you guys like better?
New York's, for sure. The Yankees have a terrifying.
They do.
That's their bread and butter. They're the Cleveland of last year. They beat Cleveland's bullpen. Their bullpen outpitched Cleveland's bullpen, which I just didn't think that was possible.
You got to go Matt Leiba way of thinking baseball playoff series and look at that bullpen right away, right, for an indicator?
I like the Astros in this one, though.
See, and this is the thing. Like, I fear the Cleveland Indians starting lineup compared to the Astros. I think Keuchel worries me, but I like Verlander. But after that, it's a bunch of career-long, almost career-long relievers starting pitching. So I'm very happy for this matchup, but I agree with you. Like, at this time of the year, when you get on a heater, but I do think the Astros can get to the pitching, and I think they'll have to do it prior to getting to the Yankees bullpen.
That gets going Friday night, right?
Yeah. How about the Nationals and the Cubs? Who do you have winning this now that the Nationals have come back and tied this series?
I find myself cheering for the Cubs just because the Cubs are the Cubs and still like that whole storyline. But what a strange 24 hours it was for the Nationals and Strasburg and Baker and everyone involved with that whole thing. And then for him to go out and have the game that he had.
Were they sort of saying this and he was fine? Because I don't trust Dusty Baker. When he comes out and says he's got the sniffles and this and that, and all of a sudden he's warming up, and that's all gamemanship in my mind. And he directed it directly at Cubs or Wrigley Field, which you know is like punching a Cubs fan in the heart. So it's just, to me, when he was warming up, and I'm like, oh. And then I saw how well he pitched. I'm like, oh, Baker, I think he was playing some games here.
I don't know if I can give him that much credit. Maybe if it was some other savvy manager, but Dusty Baker. I think it was more Strasburg knowing that his legacy was on the line, and if the team lost game four and he didn't pitch, that's right or wrong, that would have stuck with him forever.
Mm-hmm. And that would have been right.
I don't know if I want to see Dusty Baker and the Nationals overcome their playoff struggles or to see them continue.
I want the Nationals to win, but not because of Dusty Baker. I just think they've lost four now. I think they're due. I think they're a very good team. They're the Atlanta Braves if they don't get to a World Series this year. So we'll talk about the NFL game in a bit, but up next we'll get into the Jets, Royal Sports Power Hour, Tyler Dello, and we'll also hear from Josh Morrissey and Dennis Bayak on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11. On TSN 1290.
Back on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day as the Jets are in Vancouver to take on the Canucks to try and even the record at 2-2 with a victory. Full pre- and post-game. The afternoon ride will go from 3 till 7 p.m. tonight. At 7, a special two-hour Manitoba Building Trades pregame show with Kevin Olszewski and friends. Jets and Canucks live at 9 p.m. with Mr. Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns on the call. And then Olszewski and friends will have the Huron Windows postgame show to wrap it all up for you. And the Boston Pizza fan line. It'll be a late one, but that will be open. The Boston Pizza fan line will be open at 9 to discuss several things with you today here on The Big Show. TSN 1290 and Knott AutoCorp present the Blue Bus. Before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, we're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Knott AutoCorp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you up and drop you off at the Knott AutoCorp VIP tent to tailgate before the game. Then after all the football action, take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes 6 tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. To enter, simply visit tsn1290.ca and you could be off to the next Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game. Dennis Bayak, the face of the Jets on TSN3 and one of the main voices here on 1290, will join us at the bottom of the hour. NHL news and notes coming up. We may or may not talk about Nail Yakupov. Yeah, that's right. Nail Yakupov. We'll have our next qualifier, or your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas coming up. And, of course, Josh Morrissey joined us yesterday. from Vancouver. We'll get his thoughts on the game in Edmonton, the start to the season, and what he expects from the Vancouver Canucks tonight. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you, 7 minutes past the hour. And Tyler Dello from The Athletic put out a piece discussing the risk-reward of Dustin Byfuglien. We're just going to see if he can join us in a few moments. And it's a great piece about the risk and reward about Dustin Byfuglien, and that's sort of been his MO for the whole career, the risk and the reward.
Yeah, and it's even like it's really interesting where he goes into the save percentage of Jets goalies when Dustin Byfuglien is on the ice or not, and that's something that often is viewed at as being something that's based in luck. But he went all the way back to 2011-12, so there's all kinds. There's a couple thousand shots involved in that, and it's remarkable. These numbers are for five-on-five situations. When Dustin Byfuglien is on the ice, the Jets goalies have a five-on-five save percentage of 909. When he's off the ice, they have a save percentage of 924. And I've said since this show started, in watching Dustin Byfuglien, that one of the things I didn't think, and maybe back then they didn't, but that the analytics, as strong a support that they would have for Dustin Byfuglien, I would say there's nothing to measure the magnitude of his error. Because there are some times when Dustin Byfuglien is off and he's making mistakes out there, the magnitude of his error creates remarkable scoring opportunities, and Ty gets into that whole thing in this very descriptive piece where he really breaks it down with fantastic detail. And I tweeted it out yesterday. If you're not a member of The Athletic, if you're a fan of sports, at this point in time, with all of the stuff they're kicking out, like right across North America, it is absolute must to join it. But this piece is remarkable and really shows, for the first time, really, I believe, just the impact of Dustin Byfuglien on the ice. It's interesting stuff.
And I think Garrett Hole was putting some stuff out,
yeah.
And I don't want to, the specifics of it, Garrett gets into it, but basically what he had, I think he was the fifth best defenseman offensively last year.
It was second best five-on-five offensive impact, and then fifth or sixth worst.
Sixth worst, I thought it was.
Defensively, yeah.
Yeah, defensively. And when it all added up, it came to be the 48th ranked defenseman in the National Hockey League.
See, and that, again, would lead credence to my understanding of the situation with Dustin Byfuglien, where does that help you win games? That trade-off, right? And I don't think, when you're talking about a team that is desperate for defensive consistency, the infusion of Dustin Byfuglien, whatever he gives you offensively, the cracked foundation that it leads to defensively, to me, is not worth the trade-off. You're a stronger team overall from a team perspective, and especially when you're trying to emphasize defensive structure. You're a stronger team without a force out there that is so disruptive in what you're trying to accomplish as a team.
See, and I disagree with that, because if he's 48th and there's 31 teams and teams are dressing six D-men a night, that still has him as a top two, maybe top three defensemen on a team on average in the league. And you add in the intangibles.
You should be able to get a lot back in a trade, right?
Well, like 31 teams, six D-men, that's 186 D-men per game, and he's ranked 48th of 186th. That's still top two pairing. And so if he's going to play 3-4 on this team, I think the benefits outweigh the... And then you add in the intangibles of just him... I mean, doesn't do it nightly, but the things he can do compared to what other guys just can't.
I think he loses the intangibles battle. The intangibles, to me, is every once in a blue moon, he has some sort of thunderous hit and leads. And I know they love him in the locker room, so that's an intangible, right? I understand that. But when you have someone who is sort of cannibalizing what you're trying to accomplish as a team, and what has been the kryptonite or the weak spot on this team since their arrival here, right? Consistent dedication to defensive understanding and play. You have something within the team structure that is counterproductive to what is the most important goal for this team. And whatever he gives you offensively, that's fine and fantastic. But then there's the other aspect of it. And when you're the sixth worst, at what you're trying to do defensively. And I gave you the save percentage of the goaltenders touching on the magnitude of error and the position that puts goalies in when he's on the ice. It's so counterproductive to what the Jets are trying to do for a team that is as strong as they are offensively. They don't need the offensive contribution more than they need the sound defensive structure.
But to me, the offensive contribution is one of the major intangible. Like, he was 6-8.
Tangible is what can be measured. Intangible, you can't measure. So offensive production, JT, you can measure. That's
okay, well, then it's tangible. For 4 seasons in a row, the 1 year he had 45 points, he only played 69 games. So you add in 13 more games, I think he's going to get 5 more points. He's 50 points a year for 4 years, even at this age.
But what you're not weighing against that is with what Garrett Hole's study, that he's the 6th worst out there from a defensive standpoint, and then also what the issue or the situation in what Tyler Dello's pointing out with Dustin Byfuglien on the ice, where things are breaking down and there's many more times where you have forwards caught in situations trying to play defensive roles because of where Dustin Byfuglien is on the ice. And the fact of the matter is that their save percentage plummets from 924 to 909 when he's on the ice in 5-on-5 situations. And that just screams about the situation he puts the team in.
But I am weighing in Garrett Hole's information. I'm weighing it in heavily, and it comes out to 48th out of 186. So to me, that's still a minimum top three, but on most teams, a top two pairing in the National Hockey League.
And when I hear that, it kind of leads me to believe that, and what we've seen a little bit this season at least, is that I would rather have Dustin Byfuglien on the second pairing than playing the minutes that he did last year.
So would I.
So you kind of not necessarily mitigate the defensive impact there, but you're having Jacob Trouba and Josh Morrissey much more balanced defensively, playing the lion's share of minutes. And then you can work in Dustin Byfuglien where he's best and where he's as good as anybody outside of Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns in the NHL. And just kind of making sure and enacting that he spends most of his time in the offensive zone and trying to work him that way. I think the days of him being the number one defenseman, all-situation guy on this team have passed when you have a guy like Jacob Trouba who's much more he gives you much more at both ends of the ice. Now, having said that too, I think we should take into account that it was just 2 games to start the year for Dustin Byfuglien where he was really, really poor. And
these things that have been written, though,
yep,
aren't taken that into consideration.
That's fair enough. But I would still like to see, like, to point to the game at Edmonton and say Dustin Byfuglien was out, therefore the Jets played well defensively. They still gave up close to 40 shots, and the shot chart wasn't super positive. It wasn't super limited to the outside. So I would still like to see, whenever Buff does come back, see him with the team and in the lineup for, you know, name your amount of games in a row, 5 or 6 or so, and see if there is a noticeable change in his game. And if it's still teetering towards what we saw in the first 2 games, then there's going to be a major issue moving forward here, because you cannot play 20-plus minutes a game and have your defenseman not only roaming, but just aggressive play without really much of a thought of the repercussions of your decision.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I have him as a 3-4 guy. I wouldn't play him top 2, and I limit his minutes. And I think you get more out of him that way. And then I think I like everything about Jacob Trouba too, but his highest career total is 33 points. And
he did that last year, missing the first 15 games or without any power play
time. I'm interested to see what his ceiling is points-wise for sure. And the justifiable thing is too is he's very good defensively when he's on as well. So I just have him as on this team. And on any good team, I think he's a 3-4 guy.
Well, if you want him, you get with him his deficiencies and the chaos that it creates in the defensive zone. And that is precisely what has haunted this team and precisely what they're trying to get rid of. So long as he is in that situation, those remarkable weaknesses will be a part of this team, not to mention his approach to the game and how that affects things as much as everyone loves him in the room, that sort of mindset, that sort of approach where you have to try and coax the given F factor to be at the rate you want out there so that you don't see some of the nightmare looking back at that Oilers game with the floating in the D zone. Like that guy, like so long as he's in the mix, the role that he plays defines a huge element of your team. And is that good enough to be a consistent playoff team?
And I also think that who you pair him with is instrumental, too. Like, if he is going to be that way, then you have to have the right partner with him as well. We got a break. We'll try and get Tyler Dello another time. But when we come back, we'll qualify somebody and hear from Josh Morrissey on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290, RedTag.ca presents Hockey Night in Vegas. Five lucky listeners see the Golden Knights and the Jets in Vegas November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. 780-1290, the 12th caller through will be our latest qualifier. Here's our discussion with Josh Morrissey yesterday from Vancouver.
Josh, thanks for doing this. I guess a day off, back at practice, and then a game against the Canucks. First of all, tell us about the Oilers game and how much the team needed that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, on so many levels, we needed that one. Obviously, you know, you don't want to start out losing your first game and your second game. And, of course, then you wouldn't want to go on that losing streak to start. But, you know, for us, we needed that game for confidence levels. And I think another reason, obviously, is to know that we can win against good teams. And also, you know, for anyone who watched the game, obviously being up 2-0, them scoring a couple of quick goals in the second, which was no different than the Calgary game. But obviously, us responding the way that we want to, and you know, being able to be a tight team where all of a sudden we sort of settle in field game in the next few minutes and get a couple big goals from Fly, Nicky Ewers, and take control over the game again. So it was a huge win for us, and obviously we want to finish off this trip strong in Vancouver.
Josh, last year in your rookie year, there was always an element of calmness and you're being collected on the ice. Watching Tucker Pullman very early in his season this year, he seems to bring that same sort of factor with him in his game.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Tux is just a calm guy. I mean, he's very, very relaxed and, composed is probably a better way. He's just, you know, he goes to the rink every day. He does his job and you know, comes back the next day and does the exact same thing. So, you know, that's, I think the right mentality if you want to be a pro and you know, obviously for him, he's a little bit older, but he is just starting his pro career off, and so to already have that figured out, I mean, you know, he's a heck of a player, and you know, it's been exciting to see how well he's done, and you know, it's awesome to play alongside guys that you know, just come in and do their job and you know, do it super well. He had an awesome game, obviously. You know, playing in Edmonton, you know, it's a loud rink. Obviously, being out there against, you know, probably if not the best player in the world, you know, at some point during the game. I mean, it's not the easiest first game, and he played awesome. So, you know, he's a heck of a player.
Are you a veteran now, or are you the guy who goes, okay, listen, Tucker, this is what you need to do against Connor McDavid? And do you give him advice and tips on that? And what was it like for you after that, Josh, not only helping maybe Tucker Pullman get into a game like that, but yourself facing Connor McDavid?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm a veteran player. I mean, obviously, at, you know, still 22 and just in my second year, you know, and obviously, you know, for Tux, I mean, coming out of school, sure, it's his first year, but he is, you know, I forget, he's a couple years older than I am. you know, I guess in that situation, yet, you know, once we found out that Tux was playing, it's just, hey, man, just do your thing. Have a, you know, enjoy it most of all. And I think that's what he did. I mean, I don't think he, needed a huge pep talk from me, but, I think, you know, just, explaining that he probably was going to have to do the hot lap and skate around, by himself for a little bit and warm up was really the only advice I gave him. You know, he was more than ready to go without any advice from me, but, yeah. And then playing against, you know, Connor, obviously, you know, he's, like I said, it's arguably the best player in the world. And, for myself, that's always a challenge that I want to, you know, be given that opportunity to try and play against him. And, you know, there's going to be times where, he is the best player in the world and he shows that and he, you know, makes you look bad and whatnot. But I want, you know, that challenge to play against him. And, I think when you play against the best players, you know, that's where you, see exactly where you stack up on the totem pole. And, you know, it's just an opportunity for you to compete against the best guys. So, I, you know, kind of try and relish the opportunity and, you know, for Troops and I, playing against, his line, pretty much all night, you know, we were pretty happy with how it went and, obviously more happy even, that we were able to get the win.
That's Josh Morrissey, defenseman with the Winnipeg Jets, joined us yesterday morning prior to practice in Vancouver. We'll run that again at 8:45 today, and he'll also delve into more about the Canucks game tonight. As it is Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290. Who's our qualifier for hockey nights in Vegas?
It's Rob Solmanson.
Rob Solmanson!
Solze!
Solze! You get a Jets gear gift card just for qualifying. We'll do it again at 8:15. Up next, Dennis Bayak live from Vancouver on The Big Show. Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
This next segment is brought to you by Olympic Building Center. Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. 32 minutes past the hour on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Canucks tonight at 9 p.m.
Still can't believe this cat's gone, man.
Yeah. Every time I heard him, actually, I was driving in today and I...
You're giving her? Had it turned up to 11?
Heard a little Audio Slave.
Nice.
Oh, I loved Audio Slave.
Oh, yeah. Their first album's one of the best all time. Certainly one of the best of this era for the genre.
Cochise.
Woo. That whole, every tune, man, on that CD is sick.
Yeah, it's very good. We'll have your NHL news and notes coming up as well. We're also going to tee up Week 6 of the National Football League. Jeff Reinbold is going to do that with us at the top of the hour. David Pagnetta, and, of course, an hour of your phone calls. And we will hear more from Josh Morrissey, who joined us from Vancouver yesterday prior to the Jets practice to tee up tonight's Canucks-Jets game. Right now, we're going to talk with the face of the Winnipeg Jets, Mr. Dennis Bayak, and also one of the main voices here on TSN 1290. While we get him on the line, I'll remind you that TSN 1290 is proud to be a part of the iHeartRadio network. Download the iHeartRadio app and listen to us on all your favorite devices, or go for the Perfect Four section and choose from hundreds of channels to suit any mood or music taste. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app and get streaming. Maybe get a little Audio Slave on that app as well. And
give her.
Let your day give her. Go for a rip and give her to some Audio Slave. Well, we have a moment here. Your early thoughts on the Panthers and the Eagles tonight. I don't know who to take in this game. I really don't. I like the Eagles. I think they're the better team, but Carolina's at home.
That's a heck of a game, huh?
Finally, on a Thursday.
Well, I don't know. Thursdays have been – we've had a couple treats, I think, on Thursday nights that have been – good games, but these are two teams here, two surging teams. Philly at 4-1, of course, the Carolina at 4-1. Right, Cam Newton finding some of the years past sort of level of play here, and the defense, the Carolina, pretty doggone spiffy as well. And Carson Wentz, of course, pretty impressive. 137 points scored for the Eagles. This is going to be a beauty. It should be a beauty anyway.
Yeah, and I'm serious. Like, and I know people who listen to the six pack go, of course you don't know who to take. But no, I seriously don't know who to take tonight. I think the Eagles are good, but Carolina at home are
Thursday,
and rolling.
That's the thing, right? Thursday nights, you take the home team.
Yeah. I think that's what I'll do. Done. just like the six-pack. We welcome in from Vancouver, the face of the Jets on TSN 3 and one of the main voices here on TSN 1290, Mr. Dennis Bayak. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm okay, thank you.
What time is it there?
Have you gone to bed yet? Are you just staying
it's
up?
It's 5:33. Oh, yeah, no. I don't adapt the time change all that well, so no late nights for me.
You got a tea time probably in about 30 minutes, don't you?
No. It's game day.
That was the best, Dennis. I thought I was in trouble. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning.
No such thing as golfing on game days. Never will.
Really, huh?
No,
there's no time.
Ever.
We appreciate you joining us, and we'll just start with the decision yesterday. I'm not shocked by it because I liked everything about Connor Hellebuck's play, but I just thought they would tap Steve Mason tonight as well. This whole approach to this season is a little different from Paul Maurice in my mind. Your thoughts on the decision?
Yeah, I thought when the decision was made in Edmonton that Hellebuck was starting, in my mind I kind of thought didn't matter what Connor Hellebuck did that Steve Mason was going to get the call in Vancouver. So I wasn't surprised. I agree with you that, you know, it's urgency is maybe an overused word a little bit, but the leash maybe does seem a little bit shorter on some things this year than maybe in past years, and you know, maybe they just feel Connor Hellebuck's on a roll right now and he deserves the start, and sometimes you just look at it from your returning netminder standpoint, that what message are you sending to him if you don't start him tonight after a real solid effort. So as he said yesterday, it's his opportunity to come up with another good one and see what happens after that.
Dennis, it's kind of yesterday it was like a big story, so I'll just bring it up quickly with you. And I kind of wonder ultimately if it's an old school, new school kind of a thing. In the old days, if you were removed from the roster due to injury, I think in any sport, you wouldn't let a photo being taken of you doing something that there's some level of physicality. It's just not smart PR move. In this day and age, the new school, don't even think about that and allow it to happen, and then it becomes a difficult thing for the organization to have to deal with during the course of a day. Is that sort of the way you break down the Dustin Byfuglien photo with the 12-foot sturgeon?
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong there. If you don't tweet it, sure as heck somebody has a picture of it and it's going to get out. So if the Jets come back yesterday and say that, as far as we know, everybody just stayed in their rooms and didn't walk out the door for fear of getting hit by a bus. and then somebody all of a sudden has a photo that shows Dustin Byfuglien catching a sturgeon. So, you know what? I was surprised when the firestorm hit yesterday. I mean, I saw the picture. I never thought anything of it other than, well, that's a heck of a fish. It wasn't like he went alligator wrestling where you got to jump on it and wrestle with the death. I mean, this sturgeon was caught. There were some pictures taken. It was let go. It was a heck of a fish. And I think the strain on your body is a lot different going fishing than it is playing a hockey game. So I was a little bit surprised by the reaction of a lot of people. I saw it, never thought twice.
In the old days, there were no pictures. Like in the old days,
that's really old days.
There literally was. You could sit in a bar all afternoon. You could sit in a bar and have lunch and a couple beers all afternoon, and no one. All you would hear is some guy said, "I went for lunch today and I saw an NHL player."
Yeah, you'd have had a guy with a pencil and a paper drawing a sketch of Dustin Byfuglien and Matt Hendricks with this fish in that. But
and then the fish would have been even bigger in that sketch.
Yeah, and here's the other side of this: we have to just trust that if there was a chance that this was going to slow his recovery or whatever, they would not have let him go. He wouldn't have gone. The medical staff wouldn't have let him go. There's even a chance that this was later in the season that Dustin Byfuglien may never have come out of the lineup. We never would have known that he was nicked up, and there wouldn't even be a story here. So, but that's the way it is today. That's the world we live in. And somebody's always got a camera someplace that's going to take a picture.
Dennis, if Tucker Pullman's going to come out and sort of have a Josh Morrissey calm, composed, smart thing going on whenever he has the opportunity to play, sort of like what we've seen up this point in time, he really gives the Jets some interesting options going forward, or at least some remarkable depth if needed. If that's their seventh guy, that's pretty outstanding.
Yeah, there was some fans at practice yesterday, and And, you know, they came over and we were talking, and they said they live in Vancouver, and they just said, was there anybody that was a surprise making the team? And we kind of thought about it for a minute, and I said, well, I guess Tucker Pullman, but not necessarily because of the player he is, but because of everything that happened to him last spring with the shoulder surgery, and then his training this summer got limited a little bit because of that, and he's come in and he has been very, very good. I mean, he's a now and again, I mean, and we've talked about this in training camp yet. He's 24 years old, so he's a bit of a different animal than a 19 or a 20-year-old coming in and trying to break the lineup. You know, as Josh Morris he was after he was drafted, but regardless, age doesn't matter. He's as a player, he's been very good, very smart, goes back and gets the puck under pressure, makes that first pass. So you're right. I mean, certainly they have some depth, and depending on how things go here, you know, it makes some decisions harder and makes some decisions easier. So I know that that Paul Maurice doesn't like having eight defensemen. It makes very, you know, kind of for some difficult times when you've got a couple of D-men back there. And the bottom line is when Tucker Pullman is out of the lineup, there is going to come a time, if they're healthy, that he just simply needs to play. But he's been very good.
You know, it's interesting, Dennis. Blake Wheeler joined the afternoon ride yesterday with Hussler and Rick Ralph, and then Josh Morrissey joined us, and we're running it this morning. And in the age of cliches and not very much being said, it was pretty open and honest from the players, and I know you're there even with the coaching staff, that they needed that win in Edmonton.
Well, they did, and I know it's cliches, and you try and, you know, we all listen to the audio, and sometimes you run it back and listen to it again and try and say, okay, is there a meaning in here? Is he actually telling us more than we think he is? But it was, I mean, nobody wants to go 0-3. And yes, it's early in the year, and if they would have lost in Edmonton, we'd have heard all the cliches that it's early in the year, there's still lots of game left, lots of time left, and as long as we play the right way and everything else, but nothing replaces a win, especially when you're on the road, you've got an off day in Vancouver, and it just made things a little bit easier. People are walking around with a few more smiles, and you know, bottom line is winning beats losing, and it was a big win for them. I think it gave them some belief in the structure that they're trying to play. The way even the game played out, I think, was key. There wasn't, and this is what made that Toronto game such a setback, because they had talked about not taking penalties, they had talked about the power play, they had talked about being better defensively, and all that got shot out the window in one game, or 2 minutes and 38 seconds, to be honest, of the first period. So, you know, it was big, because they were disciplined, they only took a couple of penalties, Edmonton came back and tied the game, they didn't panic, they used the timeout, they came right back and got a couple more goals. So lots of little things that lead to a big win in that game in Edmonton.
Dennis, they've got 3 points in two games. They're 1-0-1. They're being outshot by an average of about 11 shots per game, and the Sedins are getting 14:45, a total ice time. What's going on with the Canucks?
Well, it's time for the rebuild, I guess, and if they had a choice to make, and there was probably internal discussion, they might have felt that during the off season might have been better, or last season might have been better to trade the Sedins, but it's one of those situations where you want players to finish their careers in your market and with your organization. I think that means a lot going forward. We'll see what happens as this season progresses, but certainly the Vancouver Canucks are in a little bit of a transition. That's why it was a bit surprising that Brock Besser didn't play the first two games. He's expected to be in the lineup tonight. But again, Travis Green said that you know, he just doesn't want to rush the young man, and he'll get his opportunity to play, and that may happen tonight. But there's certainly a transition time going here in Vancouver. I'm not sure that scoring goals is going to be easy for them. A lot of it's going to depend on Markstrom and what he can do in nets, and so far he's been good for them. So, but it is a transition time here in Vancouver, no doubt.
And speaking of that, like Alexander Burmistrov getting more ice time than the Sedins, it's what's the feel around the Canucks in Vancouver these days?
Well, and yet the feeling going into tonight is that Burmistrov's going to be a scratch. So we'll find out when we go to the rink later this morning for the morning skate and see what they decide on that front. But I guess Travis Green, you know what, veteran players still know how to play this NHL game better than young guys, and that's it. That's the black and white of it. And he probably felt going against Edmonton that Bermistrov could bring something defensively, and that would maybe free the Sedins, and there's line matching that goes on and everything else. So, I mean, the Sedins' ice time, I think they were expecting that their ice time would come down this year, and there may still be games where, depending on how the game is going, where, you know, if they're down a couple or whatever, where the Sedins may get more ice time, or if they get lots of power plays, the ice time will come for them. But right now, I think Travis Green is trying to get a real good handle on everybody that they have here and see where everybody fits, not only short-term, but certainly more long-term.
Dennis, Ehlers, Scheifele, and Wheeler were an absolute force in this most recent game. Is there any concern with maybe a lack of chemistry for line A with Little and Perreault?
Well, if you go back to last year, that was a pretty good line. When Matthew Perreault went on that great run at the end of last season, he actually did it with two different lines. He did it with Scheifele and Wheeler for a while, but then a lot of it came when he played with Little and Patrick Laine. So, you know, I think the Jets system is fairly structured that way. Yes, you have some freedom to do what you want. I mean, it's Perreault does play a bit of a different game than the other guys. Matthew Perreault likes to get down low and muck his way around in the corners and bust to the front of the net, and that's why he gets hurt the way he does, because of the tough game that he plays, and he likes that game. He likes being a bit of an agitator. So, but we have seen chemistry with those guys before, and I mean, Patrick Laine had 5 shots on goal the other day. A couple of those go in, and all of a sudden we're talking about 2 really solid lines for the Winnipeg Jets. So that's the hope. You know, I mean, I know Paul Maurice changes lines, but I think that's the plan, is to leave Ehlers where he is for now. You go back to the end of the 2015-16 season, down the stretch that line was so good, the 3 of them, and they'll stick together until they cool off, and they were. They were a dominant line, and when you needed them most in Edmonton on Monday, they came through with the 2 goals in 1:09, and you never, you know, until the season goes on, you don't really know how important certain things are. But I think there will be times when the Winnipeg Jets look back at that stretch late in the second period when they'd given up the 2-goal lead in 40 seconds, that those 2 goals from that line are going to be very important.
In a season where we expect them to take bigger steps, beating a team, no disrespect to Vancouver, but taking advantage of a team like this is one of the other steps I'm looking forward to seeing the Jets do or expect them to do, Dennis.
Yeah, I agree, and I know it's early in the year, and people are going to say, how can, you know, we talk about a big game in Edmonton, and that's the nature of the beast in the National Hockey League these days, and you know, I think that's the Western Conference, maybe more than the Eastern Conference, although we're seeing a little more balance out there as well. New Jersey with the win last night. Every point that you can scrape up, I think, in the Western Conference and the Central Division is going to be critical. You know, Colorado's off to a better start than people expected. You know, St. Louis, despite all the injuries, is probably off to a better start than certainly I expected. So the Western Conference isn't easy, or the Western Division isn't easy. And every point you can pick up, and this is one of these games tonight where you're coming off a real solid effort in Edmonton, and you don't want to let that slip away by having a bad outing here tonight. Vancouver's the same thing. They've got a home stretch here to start, and it's an important win for them. But this is certainly one where, you know, I think the Jets want to certainly be prepared and give themselves the best opportunity to win.
Great stuff, Dennis. We really appreciate you getting up and doing this, and enjoy the game tonight.
All right, Ben. Have a good day. Talk soon.
Thanks so much, Dennis.
Dennis Bayak, the face of the Jets on TSN3, and this segment was a presentation of Olympic Building Center. Visit their design center today online at olympicbuildingcenter.ca. Build with confidence. NHL news and notes next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon, including on tomorrow's Big Show. Go to TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, NHL news and notes time on the Royal Sports Power Hour. Leafs lose, gentlemen. Leafs lose to New Jersey.
Dang it. Call off the parade for a sec. A little bit wonky, huh? They're a little wonky. And New Jersey, a little bit of a surprise as well, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah, they're fast, but we'll see how they do when they're not shooting, I think, 14%.
Right now, well, you know what? Fair with that, but who would have thought at any point in time to lead the Metro, you'd have Jersey, and to lead the Pacific, you got Vegas.
and the Avs,
St. Louis. And the Avs
are knocking on the door right behind St. Louis.
Very, very interesting. Speaking of interesting, Mr. Nail Yakupov has 3 goals, 2 assists, 5 points in 4 games with the Colorado Avalanche. Matt Duchene has 5 points. Nail Yakupov has 5 points in 4 games to start his career. Could be the start of his actual career, but to start his career with the Colorado Avalanche.
I think it's fair to say that the level of struggle for the Colorado Avalanche has been a mystery, right? Even people look at them defensively and say, yeah, they have some defensive holes, but the level of their struggle never really seemed to make sense. So great that they're where they're at, but also important to take note that Varlamov is sitting with a 945. If Varlamov has a season like he did a couple of years ago, might make things a little bit interesting for the Avs.
Yeah, it's funny how a surprise team rockets up the standings when your save percentage or your shooting percentage, like the Devils and the Avs, are up where they're at
and
right
Vegas,
now.
Yeah, like yeah,
yeah. But I would say about Colorado too. You know, they'll likely finish last in the Central again, but they weren't a 49-point team or whatever they were last year. You know, like there were some projections I saw this year. You know, something around 80 points.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, like a bit higher than that, right? Like,
I saw 67.
They weren't as bad as they were last year. I would expect a bit of a rebound, though. I still think this early start is a bit of a mirage. Plus, you have the Duchene garbage still,
which doesn't seem to be hurting them.
He's got 5 points
now.
At this point, right?
James Neal, Matt Duchene. Those will be very interesting going forward, what those two teams do with those two guys and if they keep up the pace that they're on. I wanted to get to this. Jamie McLennan on TSN was talking about the relationship and the situation with Jets goaltending between Steve Mason and Connor Hellebuyck. Here's Jamie McLennan on SportsCenter last night.
Connor Hellebuyck gets the start against the Canucks, and given how this season has started, this seems like a perfect situation for Connor Hellebuyck to take the reins in net.
It certainly is, and when you have a 24-year-old young goaltender, you were handed the reins last year. He played 53 games, and yeah, he hit the ditch a couple times, but he didn't have a mentor, a guy that could maybe take some pressure off of him a little bit. Andrei Pavlik was called up from the minors. You couldn't rely on Hutchinson, so what happened when he struggled? The team struggled. So you go out and you sign Steve Mason to a 2-year deal. Yeah, there's some money involved, but he's not being brought in as a clear-cut number one. What he's being brought in as is a bridge. So Hellebuyck, you allow him to grow, and then on times where maybe he struggles, you've got that healthy competition for Steve Mason to give you some good minutes as well. I like the tandem. They still need some consistency, but Hellebuck's a good goaltender. He has the ability to be a very good number one in this league, but he still has to prove it. He needs consistency. He's not there yet. I still maintain that you allow young players to grow, Patan, Ehlers, Laine, but they're all over Hellebuyck, and not allowing a young goaltender to grow there in Winnipeg. Allow him to. He has the ability. He will.
The goaltenders always have it tougher, right?
They do.
Yeah. Of course.
It's a tough life, goaltending.
It is, man. It will be interesting if Connor Hellebuyck can put together a solid season, and if he, you know, who knows how many starts here. We'll watch this unfold here. But as an upcoming arbitration-eligible RFA, that position can get a little bit more expensive potentially next year with the $4 million to Mason and, you know, Hellebuyck making 2.25 right now. But that's going to get a bump if he has a solid season. This is great, though. Hey, if you can wrestle away that starting job from Steve Mason and Connor Hellebuyck is spitting out a 915 or a 920, something like that, to be doing that, or these two guys go back and forth, ultimately with a save percentage considerably higher than what that position offered up last year, that's a huge shot in the arm for the team.
And that consistency starts tonight on the Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. See if Connor Hellebuyck can play as well as he did on Monday in Edmonton.
Yeah, it's, I don't even know if it's just a goalie thing either. It's basically everyone on the team. When they managed to string, what was it, 1 or 2, 3 win streaks last season? And the first one came after 9 or 10 failed attempts too. That's the biggest problem with this team, arguably, is that they just aren't consistent enough over a stretch of games, because there's no playoff team in the NHL last season that struggled to put together 3-4 game win streaks, and for the most part, they bumped those up to 5, 6, and 7.
We'll delve into Week 6 of the National Football League with Jeff Reinbold. We'll have another chance for you to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. We'll talk hockey with David Pagnata, and we'll finish our conversation with Josh Morrissey and tee up the Boston Pizza fan line. All that coming up in the next hour of The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
You wanted it back, we caved. TSN 1290 wants to better your basement with a host of cool add-ons. This time, there are two caves to choose from, the Man Cave or the Mam Cave. Each cave comes with either a men's or women's $500 Burton Gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports. Both get a pizza night for 10, courtesy of Boston Pizza. The Man Cave has two tickets to the upcoming UFC Fight Night, December 16th at Bell MTS Center. The Mam Cave has two tickets to Shania Twain's Now Tour, May 13th at Bell MTS Place. And both get a Winnipeg Jets guys or girls night out, including two tickets to an upcoming 2017-18 home game at Bell MTS Place and a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey, Puck Party. And both come with a Rink Water Nice Rink, Rink in a Box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits. And yes, it is beautiful out today in Winnipeg, but you will need that outdoor rink starter kit coming soon. You can select your cave of choice online at tsn1290.ca. We'll randomly draw a winner of each prize package on Monday, October the 30th. Once again, head to tsn1290.ca and enter your name in for either one of those. We will have another chance for you to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas as well. In this hour, David Pagnata from thefourthperiod.com at the bottom of the hour going to join us. David, I'm going to ask him heavily. I think there's trades on the abound. I think there's teams within the next 2 to 3 weeks that are going to start making some moves.
Huh.
That's just my gut feeling. Everything I read and the rumors that are going around and everything like that, I think that it's going to be an interesting first month of the season. Given that once some things play out, I think there is going to be some movement.
And you're just basing Vegas and Duchesne?
No, I just Vegas, Duchesne. I think there's some other things going on around. Oh, who was I just reading about yesterday? Well, Vegas has to get rid of some defensemen. Duchesne does. I think Detroit has some issues that they're going to address or look at. So I just think there's going to be some movement going on.
Huh.
That's just my gut feeling, though. It has been wrong before. We're just going to try and get a hold of Jeff Reinbold here. He is in the UK, so we're just having a little bit of difficulty, but we hope to get him on from Sky Sports. Of course, our NFL analysts are making picks, a former CFL coach. And in the meantime, we'll get into some NFL. We'll get back to tonight's Thursday Nighter. Who do you guys like? The home team?
Let me ask you about the Adrian Peterson trade first.
Okay.
And him coming out saying he still wants to play 4 or 5 years. How delusional can this cat be? Right?
What's that movie with Jessica Lange was the wife and, what's his name? I see his picture. He was a star running back and they were in the 60s or whatever. And then he just couldn't let it go. They called him the White Ghost.
Yeah.
And then he sort of just like his career. And the whole movie was great because it wasn't so much about his – John Goodman was his O-lineman.
Yeah.
And it wasn't so much about the – his career as it was dealing with being
Dennis
the star.
Quaid.
Dennis Quaid, that's right. And it was going away. It was his career was leaving him, and then he went to another team to try and keep playing.
The
and
end
just
is seldom pretty.
Everybody's All-American.
Everybody's All-American. Yeah. That's what it is. And it was dealing with basically not being an All-American
just
anymore.
Not letting
star,
it go.
And
right?
Not letting it, and this is what it's sad for me because I think Adrian Peterson in the right situation, New York Giants – still has a future, but not for 5 years. And it just seems like he's everybody's All-American, not willing to just take a lesser role, accept that it might be over. And I get that when you're in it. But you also have to understand that if you love playing the game and you want to continue, it has to be the right situation. 5 more years, are you kidding me?
I don't think you want to bring up the Giants as a possible destination for to him to land at this point in time. You just specifically to look at the Giants right now, in a span of 72 hours, Giants go 0-5, lose Odell Beckham Jr. and Brandon Marshall to season ankle injuries, and also they suspend Dominique Rogers-Cromartie, that McAdoo just suspended him, one of the most highly regarded guys in the locker room. It is gong show extraordinaire with the New York Giants right now.
The New York Giants, they're in a worse state than Ben McAdoo's hair right now, which is, God bless him. That's not good. But there's something kind of funny to
it's ridiculous
the fact that the Jets were seen as the tanking team going into the year.
Yeah,
would it not blow your mind as a New York, as maybe more so as a Jets fan, if the Giants sneaking out of nowhere, you know, a team that a lot of people thought might win the division this year.
I picked them to win the division,
right? But imagine if the Jets at this point, they're probably going to finish something. You know, best case scenario would be 4-12.
Yeah.
Like, they win one more game the rest of the way. But then how about the Giants just kind of coming in out of nowhere? They finish something like 2-14, and then you're able to draft the heir to Eli Manning and take away the New York Jets franchise quarterback basically right from under them.
Huh.
As for Rogers-Cromartie, this is what McAdoo had to say yesterday. He came in yesterday. We had a conversation that was personal upstairs, and he came in today and decided to leave. We will suspend him.
Yeah, and then the locker room is just reading a number of things this morning where, like, it is 1 degree below boil right now in that locker room, where guys have basically given up and given up hope for it. Right, once you lose that hope, that whole thing, when that's gone, and the level of chaos in there, it's just, to me, there's a clock ticking for McAdoo. It's just a matter of what week. I want to ask you guys too, because of the level of hardball involved with the whole anthem thing. And I saw Christine Brennan from the USA Today had a nice piece. She said she thinks the only answer ultimately is going to be to not bring the players out for the anthems. But then you have the contracts with the National Defense Department and how that whole is intertwined. Jed York has come out and said that he's not going to force players to stand up. You've got 7 team owners that have demanded their players stand up. To me, when you want to start playing hardball and force, and Eric Reed with a piece here saying that the league can't tell us we have to stand up. That's something that has to be collectively bargained on.
Well,
right?
Goodell's saying now there's no policy change on national anthem. That's
the
latest.
But you have these owners that are demanding, right? And I tweeted out yesterday, you have this white structure that is imposing its will and telling black athletes you cannot peacefully protest for what they are, which is racial equality. You have this right structure demanding that from a – you think that's going to end well? The owners are really, to me, instead of working with the players to try and remedy what is a very delicate and difficult situation, you can't flex on this movement, I don't believe, with the mindset of these athletes and think you're going to bully them into doing what you want to do.
I want to go back to Adrian Peterson and get your guys' thoughts how you think he'll do. And the can I use the word irony again?
Well, Chris if Johnson, you use it correctly. Yeah.
Chris Johnson, the running back for the Cardinals, tweets out watching the New Orleans Saints play. Literally this weekend, Adrian Peterson needs more touches. They need to use him more. A day later, life comes at you real quick. They cut Johnson and trade for Adrian Peterson. I just thought that was
ironic.
Thank you. That is ironic. However, what is he doing in Arizona? They need a running back. Like, can he be effective?
I don't think so. I think he's done. There's no explosion, nothing. I think absolutely dead and done.
It's just like every other essentially great running back. Apparently, great running backs just go to Arizona to die. I guess that's kind of the final step in your career. But unfortunately, it happens to everyone. There's maybe Barry Sanders is the only one that's beaten Father Time, and that's because
he got out when he was
exactly
whatever.
Right. Like, yeah. That's kind of the only way you can do it.
You only beat Father Time if you escape early on him, right?
Which still counts,
he's
right?
Like, you can't run and hide.
But you go down the list, and I mean, running backs more so than any other position. But you see it everywhere. The decline is it's sharp and it's steep, and there's no situation that he can go into that's going to save. That's going to save his legs, save his knees. He's just physically, he's just got nothing left in the tank.
I'm interested to see it, however it plays out, just because I think this is the right move to actually get some playing time. Like, why he went to New Orleans and then he's yelling at Sean Payton makes no sense to me. Why did you sign there? Like, you have more than enough money. I know they offered you the most money, but what did you think your role would be there? But at least now, and that was my point in the offseason to go to the Giants, at least now I think he's going to get a chance. Whether he can be effective or not is a different story, but I think at least now he's going to get a chance to actually run the ball.
32 years, averaged 1.9 yards a carry last year, averaging 3 this year. It's over and done, bro. You got to accept it, man.
Who do you guys have tonight on the Big Show, TSN 1290? Eagles in Carolina to take on the Panthers. Both are 4-1.
I'm really impressed with the Panthers. Their D looks good. Cam Newton's rounding into form. And as much as I love watching, these are two quarterbacks I love watching play the game. Right? Carson Wentz forever is going to have a soft spot in my heart because of the NDSU thing and the old conference that I used to play in, which no longer exists anymore, where NDSU was a part of it. But just the story of him coming out and you know, a green guy that you got to mold, and for him to explode on the scene and continue to improve the way he is, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. But a Thursday night against two solid teams, you have to give the edge to the home team tonight in the Panthers.
Yeah, it's funny because people don't make the comparison, but Carson Wentz plays almost identical to Cam Newton. And he's a big, big dude, yeah, too, and he's very adept and mobile in the pocket and then outside as well. I love the Eagles a lot. I think they're a legit contending team in the NFC, but that's just a tall task, you know, to fly all the way out to Carolina. I know the Panthers were out on the road last week too in Detroit, but it's just not a great mark for road teams. I think it'll be a tight one. I think it's going to be sloppy, but I would take the Panthers late in this one, and I think it'll be close, but I would still side with the home team.
I was in Fargo, I think in May or June or early this summer, and I was in Shields, the sporting goods store, and I said to the lady working there, I said, "Do you not have any Bears stuff?" And she said, "They suck. What do you want, a Trubinsky? Come on, man." Because Carson Wentz jerseys were everywhere. Oh, yeah. And I said, "Is he, like, does he still come back? Is he?" She goes, "He's here right now." And Alshon Jeffrey and all these other receivers are actually with him working out at North Dakota State.
Now, how cool is that? Like, if you're bringing recruits around or even just inspiring the young fellas that are part of that program, that's as cool as it gets.
And we know this, that quarterbacks do this, but it's usually in California or Miami. They go, "Meet me for 2 weeks down here. We're going to work on some stuff." But he was actually back in Fargo. And again, it was May or June, and he had brought in like 5 or 6 of the Eagles receivers, and they were just working out every day together. So that being said, I'm going with the Panthers, though, against Carson Wentz tonight. I'm going with the home team, and I like everything about the Eagles this year, but I think the Panthers are sort of on a roll, and they're the home team, so I'll go with them. We'll have your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas next. More hockey as well, and David Pegnat at the bottom of the hour. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290 on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Canucks tonight at 9 on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Ring those phones. Ring those phones. 780-1290, TSN 1290, and RedTech.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're sending 5 lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. What are the chances they're still undefeated by November the 10th?
Slim to none.
Return airfare to and from Las Vegas. Free parking at Winnipeg at Richardson International Airport, courtesy of Park and Fly. 2 hockey tickets, Jets versus Golden Knights on the 10th of November, once again at T-Mobile Arena. 4 nights accommodations right on the strip at the MGM Grand Hotel, and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable with Kevin Olszewski, and 5:15 p.m. with Mr. Hustler and Mr. Rick Ralph. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show. Next grand prize announcement coming up on October the 23rd, and our final grand prize announcement will be November the 6th. For more information, check out TSN1290.ca. It's Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by RedTag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals, and us here at TSN 1290.
Big shout out to everyone involved with the Dakota Community Center Fieldhouse that's opening up. The big kickoff today at 11 o'clock. It's adjacent to the Jonathan Tate Sportsplex. It's a new $20.5 million fieldhouse that houses 60,000 square feet of exceptional sport, recreational, and multi-use space to the Dakota Community Center campus, and has been designed with just some fantastic features. It's going to be an absolute gem for the city. Congrats, congrats to everyone involved.
Indeed. And didn't you, didn't a soccer team win the Nationals?
Yes.
We should mention that, too. Before.
Which, yeah, like...
we'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
Let's do our 12th qualifier through today is...
Jay Gagnon.
Jay Gagnon, how are you, sir?
Hey, guys. How are you doing this morning?
We're doing very well. How are you?
Really good this morning. Finally got in. Got
nice.
My name to draw right on.
I was going to ask you, was it hard to get through, get in?
I got through quite a bit, but I've been 9th, 10th caller in around there. I got through the last contest you guys had last year, but I didn't win, unfortunately. So I'm looking forward to headed to Vegas soon, hopefully.
See, that's what we like, confidence. You have to have that confidence. And good for you on the dialing. It's all about timing. 9th, 10th, so close. Brandon breaks your heart until today.
Yeah, you got it.
So, have you ever been to Vegas?
No, I have not yet. I'm in my mid-40s and looking forward to going this year. Would be very nice.
You know what's only better than going to Vegas for the first time in your 40s? It's going for free.
Yeah, you got that right. That's for sure. Might not be coming back if I go. That's not
Well, hey, you're in your 40s. There's no better way to go, man.
Just
ride into the sunset in Vegas.
Stick and stay in Vegas. That's an all right thing, man.
Who would you go with, Jay?
I'd probably bring my better half with me, I think.
Excellent. Has she been to Vegas before?
Yeah, she went last year, so I don't know. Maybe I might bring my brother, though. But yeah, no, probably here. Otherwise, I'd be in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, it sounds like you might already be in some trouble.
She'll be giving your brother the evil eye for the next couple of weeks, for sure. Hey, Jay, just for getting through today and qualifying, you're in for the grand prize draws, but you also get a Jets Gear gift card. So congratulations, and thanks for listening to TSN 1290.
No problem. Have a great day, guys.
Yeah, luck, you man. Too.
Okay, talk to you later.
Next grand prize draw is October 23rd, and if you have qualified and aren't fortunate enough to get your name drawn on that, you're still in for the November 6th draw, as is Jay. Thanks for listening to TSN 1290. Local soccer team wins nationals.
Yeah, crazy, man. It doesn't happen very often, of course, from just a population standpoint, right, when you're up against big, bad Ontario, BC, Quebec, and such. But the U-17 Bonnie Vittel boys national champs, big time congrats to them. They went undefeated throughout the competition, 5-0, had a +17 goal diff. Head coach is Tony Mazda, assistant coach Greg Nordman, and manager Jody Martin. Congrats to all the boys. Fantastic stuff, man. Way to go.
That is outstanding stuff. Doing well on the soccer scene here in Manitoba. Back to the Jets and the Canucks. We brought it up with Dennis Bayak. We mentioned at the start of the show, we'll bring it up again. Travis Green taking over, Nolan Baumgartner there. I'm not, you know, shocked or surprised at all that the Sedins' ice time have gone down. But we see our old friend Alexander Burmistrov out there, got more ice time.
It's just a little bit under, but they're both hovering around 14 minutes.
Okay, yeah. But then Dennis telling us today they'll find out for sure at the morning skate, but it looks like he'll be a healthy scratch in the Canucks lineup.
I wonder how often this has happened. And, you know, the Sedin line is still presented as their top line and out with Vanek. But I wonder when the last time you've had a line where all, like the Sedin brothers or the twins and Vanek are all upcoming UFAs. Wonder when the last time you've had a line like that in the NHL. Everyone's an upcoming UFA.
Yeah, that's...
It doesn't happen very often.
No.
Where's sexy Louis Erickson?
He was with Burmistrov on that third line, but now I guess it kind of depends.
Third line.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Holy.
And if especially if Besser gets in.
Granlund, Burmistrov, and Erickson?
Four more years after this one at 6. I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, that was a bad contract. That was a contract that had no business being signed by Vancouver. Like maybe if you're a contending team, you can kind of look at it and say, well, you know, you eat the back end.
5 years left, guys. 5 years
left. After this year or including this year?
Including, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I agree with you. I expected him to get $6 million per, but I expected it to be with a different team going in a different direction than the Vancouver Canucks.
It's a team that's getting outshot in the first two games by an average of 11. They're not generating a lot of shots at all.
The other storyline in tonight's game is the fabulous Flying Tanev brothers will face off against each other. Chris Tanev of the Vancouver Canucks and Brandon of your very own Winnipeg Jets tonight. Whenever brothers play against each other, I like to call them the Fabulous Flying Something. So the Fabulous Flying Ten of Brothers will face off against
an old
each other
wrestling,
tonight.
The Flying
yes.
Brunzel, or I can't remember.
Yeah,
but Ten of with that third line, right? With Matthias and Lowry?
Well, I'll say one thing. If they're any good at being brothers, they're dropping the mitts tonight. You got like that's
come on, Rewicki.
No. You gotta let him know who's number one out there. I want Keith and Wade Primo.
Mom doesn't want to see that. Come on.
I know, having grown up in Lethbridge, my brother's older brother went to school with the Sutter.
Your brother's older brother,
or sorry, my friend's older brother went to school with the Sutters, and he has stories about just sitting in the back seat of a car, driving to a party, and sitting in the middle of Rich and Ron. And just taking shot after shot as they try to go at each other over nothing.
Yeah.
They just literally, on the ice and off the ice, were just like, they're close as can be and still are. But they used to, even in high school, battle royals as brothers. And he goes, I'd be sitting in the middle of the backseat of the car going to a party going, Rich, he didn't mean it. Or Ron, take it easy. And then the blows would just start flying. Tonight's lines, Scheifele centering Ehlers, Wheeler, Little centering Laine, Perreault, Lowry in between Tanev and Matthias, Kopp in between Daniel Patan, Morrissey, Trouba, Enstrom, Poolman, Kulikov, Myers, Hellebuck gets the start. We'll have more on this game and your thoughts on the Boss Pizza fan line coming up. But up next, David Pegnat on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. The afternoon ride with Andrew Hustler-Patterson and Rick Ralph from 3 till 7 tonight, or this afternoon. And then at 7, a special two-hour Manitoba Building Trades pregame show with Mr. Kevin Olszewski and friends. Puck drops live from Vancouver between the Canucks and the Jets at 9 p.m. tonight with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns on the call. And then the Huron Windows postgame show will wrap it all up with the Boston Pizza Fan Line. Our Boston Pizza Fan Line will be open at 9 o'clock today. Lots to get to with the Jets, Mr. Dustin Byfuglien, and Connor Hellebuck getting the start, and everything else into tonight's lineup. We're also going to hear from Josh Morrissey. He joined us yesterday from Vancouver to get his thoughts on the game in Edmonton, the start to the season, and what he expects tonight in Vancouver. We'll rerun that in its entirety in our next segment. As we continue the hockey talk right now, we're just trying to get David Pegnat and see if we can go 3 for 4
tonight. Yeah, we're going Aaron Judge at the plate here. He's swinging and missing.
I should say 1 for 4, actually, because we did get Dennis Bayak, not 3 for 4, as we try to get in touch with David Pegnata here on The Big Show. And interested to see his thoughts on if there's some movement around the National Hockey League. Are you guys surprised, given the salary cap situation for some teams, that and how many defensemen some teams have, that there wasn't more movement in the preseason start of the year? And do you expect movement, even though there wasn't a lot of it?
Yeah, I don't expect some wild thing to break out the way you're kind of hinting. I don't think, even with the whole Vegas thing, I don't think there's going to be a lot of movement. I believe the way Wicks presented it yesterday, where he just sort of overplayed his hand, and it was very soon after. Like, it was months ago that was when, if you're going to move guys, like, now who's got the upper hand on it? You just kind of wonder how it all plays out. But I don't foresee, even with the Duchesne thing, I don't think that's, like, I don't know why you would think you'd have leanings that's going to finally transpire now, when we've had 3 years or however long it's been of status quo. Especially if Colorado's playing well.
Yeah, that's the wrinkle nobody saw coming in there. But I think the important thing to remember here is that GMs of the NHL, for the most part, are chicken. They don't like to make trades anymore. They don't. Outside of Stan Bowman, who really makes big moves in season? Nobody does it. So I don't really expect any sort of flurry of movement, just because we just never see it anymore. You might get a trade or two from Vegas, but outside of that, I'm not holding my breath for any kind of player movement here.
You've also only got about 15 teams that have more than $2 million in cap space to play around with. All right, so that kind of limits things when you got everyone crunching the cap the way it is.
In Ottawa, it doesn't seem like there's going to be an extension for Kyle Turris. Does that surprise you guys?
Well, it's term, right? Like they've said they've come to an agreement on the – it's kind of a funny way to present it, but I heard it presented that they've come to an agreement on the dollar value but not the term. Well, the term ends up being dollars, right? So like Kurt Turris going for 7-8 years, and I don't believe it was reported what Ottawa's offering, but of course term's going to come into play when you're dealing with the age, especially of Kyle Turris. I'm not surprised, man. Term – right, if a guy wants a long contract like that, and in today's league, there's been too many lessons learned to serve up a lengthy deal to a guy who is similar to like when you're turning 28, 29 years old, upcoming, you want an 8-year deal. That's bad news for any organization.
We'll get into Josh Morrissey's interview with us from yesterday in our next segment, but before we get to that. This is from Elliot Friedman's 30 Thoughts, and it's from Andre Pavlik. Andre Pavlik was preparing to be without an NHL contract in August, ready to fight somewhere with no guaranteed job for the 2017-18 season. Quote, I didn't want to go to Europe, he said last Saturday. I got a KHL offer in May, but they wanted a decision in 2 days. I said no. I wanted one more try at the NHL. The phone rang on July 1st. Were you surprised the Rangers called? Yes, but it's New York. What a great place to play. Goalie coach Benoit Allaire is moving him back on the goal line. Quote, I've tried it before, Pavlik said, but I didn't stay with it because I didn't trust it. Now you see Henrik doing it, and every day you see how it works. With that technical change comes an adjustment to Pavlik's thinking. Before, you come out and challenge the shooter. If he passes to your side and someone else scores, you think, well, it's not my fault. Someone else was supposed to stop the pass. Allaire doesn't want you to think like that. He wants you to think, why can't I be in position to make that save too? Also from Elliot Friedman's 30 Thoughts, Pavlik watched Winnipeg's season opening 7-2 loss to Toronto. He took no satisfaction in it. Quote, I felt bad for Steve Mason.
Yeah, fair. And I, you know, seeing Pavlik in a Rangers jersey for me immediately softens my, like, I, you know, you wish him well in a tough spot, but he's only had one game played so far and allowed 3 goals on 24 shots. So his save percentage isn't off to a good start. But I wonder when Andre Pavlik is 35 years old and hockey's behind him, I wonder if someone, like, there's so much athletic skill there with Andre Pavlik. And when you heard the number of people, like even his own countrymen, talking about his lack of dedication to his craft, right? And a lot of athletes that don't reach their full potential, that have these remarkable God-given gifts and just kind of get by on those gifts without really applying themselves to the level necessary to reach their full potential, at some point in time, you got to reflect on that and with some level of regret. And that's sort of the sad thing to me when you got a guy as skilled as Andre Pavlik is from an athletic standpoint, but a guy that was never tuned in or dialed in enough to really work at his craft at the level necessary. It's just sort of a sad story to me.
The one time I and why I believed in Andre Pavlik is he's very skilled. Like when you watch him practice, it's there. But the one time I thought it was the season, the off season before they went to the playoffs. He was shook. He saw that his job might be on the line. And I'm wondering what kind of season he's going to have now, given what you just swear at and how it's all played out. You're right. It happens a lot or more often than it should. But there are some athletes that just, you know, they're successful or they get to a certain point and they don't see what it, you know, or have the drive to take that next step. I'm real interested to see the kind of season he has backing up Lundqvist.
Here's his career, just real quickly, okay? For, say, percentage numbers. 905, 880, 906, 914, his final year in Atlanta. That's when he arrived with so much promise. 906, 905, 901, 920 out of left field, including three back-to-back-to-back shutouts for the playoff spot. 904, 888, and so far an 875 in New York.
And that just reads to when he was motivated and when he wasn't, if you look at those seasons. It's interesting.
And those, again, like I've touched on this a few times with different examples, when you have to extract motivation from an athlete, you are messing with something that just typically does not add up to success for a team.
We'll take an early break here because we want to get to the entire Josh Morrissey interview. He weighed in with us yesterday on the start of the season, the game in Edmonton, Tucker Poolman, defensive play, and, of course, the Canucks game tonight. It is a Santa Lucia Winnipeg Jets game day. Josh Morrissey's on the Big Show next, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day, Jets and Canucks on TSN 1290 at 9. The Boss Pizza fan line will be open at 9 o'clock. Your thoughts on the Bufflin picture, Connor Hellebuck getting the start, and the Thursday nighter. Who are you taking, the Panthers or the Eagles? Josh Morrissey joined us live from Vancouver yesterday. Well, was live at the time. Here's our interview with defenseman Josh Morrissey on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
Josh, thanks for doing this. I guess a day off back at practice and then a game against the Canucks. First of all, tell us about the Oilers game and how much the team needed that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, on so many levels, we needed that one. Obviously, you know, you don't want to start out losing your first game and your second game, and of course then you wouldn't want to go on that losing streak to start, but you know, for us, we needed that game for confidence levels, and I think another reason obviously is to know that we can win against good teams, and also, you know, for anyone that watched the game, obviously being up 2-0, them scoring a couple of quick goals in the second, which was no different than the Calgary game, but obviously us responding the way that we want to, and you know, being able to be a tight team where all of a sudden we sort of settle in field game in the next few minutes and get a couple big goals from Fly, Nicky Ewers, and take control over the game again. So it was a huge win for us, and obviously we want to finish off his trip strong in Vancouver.
Josh, last year in your rookie year, there was always an element of calmness and you're being collected on the ice. Watching Tucker Poolman very early in his season this year, he seems to bring that same sort of factor with him in his game.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Tux is just a calm guy. I mean, he's very, very relaxed and composed is probably a better way. He's just, you know, he goes to the rink every day. He does his job and you know, comes back the next day and does the exact same thing. So, you know, that's, I think the right mentality if you want to be a pro and you know, obviously for him, he's a little bit older, but, he is just starting his pro career off. And so to already have that figured out, I mean, you know, he's a heck of a player and you know, it's been exciting to see how well he's done. And, you know, it's awesome to play alongside guys that, you know, just come in and do their job and you know, do it super well. He had an awesome game, obviously, you know, playing in Edmonton. You know, it's a loud rink, obviously, being out there against, you know, probably the best player in the world, you know, at some point during the game. I mean, it's not the easiest first game, and he played awesome. So, you know, he's a heck of a player.
Are you a veteran now, or are you the guy who goes, okay, listen, Tucker, this is what you need to do against Connor McDavid? And do you give him advice and tips on that? And what was it like for you after that, Josh, not only helping maybe Tucker Poolman get into a game like that, but yourself facing Connor McDavid?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm a veteran player. I mean, obviously at, you know, still 22 and just in my second year, you know, and obviously, you know, for Tux, I mean, coming out of school, sure, it's his first year, but he is, you know, I forget he's a couple years older than I am. And I guess in that situation, yet, you know, once we found out that Tux was playing, it's just, hey man, just do your thing. Enjoy it most of all. And I think that's what he did. I mean, I don't think he, needed a huge pep talk from me, but, I think, you know, just, explaining that he probably was going to have to do the hot lap and skate around, by himself for a little bit, and warm up was really the only advice I gave him. He was more than ready to go without any advice from me. But yeah, and then playing against Connor, obviously, he's like I said, it's arguably the best player in the world, and for myself, that's always a challenge that I want to be given that opportunity to try and play against him. And there's going to be times where he is the best player in the world, and he shows that, and he makes you look bad and whatnot. But I want that challenge to play against him, and I think when you play against the best players, that's where you see exactly where you stack up on the totem pole, and it's just an opportunity for you to compete against the best guys. So I kind of try and relish the opportunity, and for Troops and I playing against his line pretty much all night, we were pretty happy with how it went, and obviously more happy even that we were able to get the win.
Yeah, you guys were out there on the ice a lot against that line, Josh, and you did a fantastic job of minimizing the effect of Connor McDavid, no question about that. There appeared to be a lot more structure maintained in the defensive zone in that third game against Edmonton. What was the main reason for that?
Well, I think what would be interesting is if you watched, especially our game against Calgary in our first period, we had a pretty good defensive structure. And then obviously, even into the second period, and as a couple goals went in, we sort of started to lose that structure. And obviously that's when the game started to get out of hand. And so, I think that was, like I said earlier, probably, the most impressive thing about, our game against, Edmonton was, we had our defensive structure. We were playing the right way, defensively and all over the ice. Our minds were right. We were playing, aggressively and composed, but, also with that, I thought that intensity was right as well. And, then again, once you have a couple goals against and now it's a tie game, obviously, the timeout by Mo, I think was perfect. We just said, hey guys, relax. This is exactly what we've been talking about the last couple of days. This is where, you feel the game. Obviously they have the momentum at that point. Obviously, their arena is getting loud and we don't want to give that game away like we had the one prior. And, I thought we did a great job. We, just felt, the next few shifts, made simple plays, played the right way. And then we were able to, sort of start to sway the momentum the opposite way, with that, Ehlers, first goal and then his second goal. So that was exactly what we'd been talking about, and we executed it, to a T.
Last one for you before we let you go, Josh. Is that the key to the game against Vancouver? I know you'll be focusing on some intricacies that the Canucks bring, but is the key to getting that defensive play to be consistent going into the game?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, mistakes are going to happen throughout the season. It's a long year. But for us, we just really want to be right. I think that's where when we're playing, when we get on the ice, we want to have that commitment to playing the right way at both ends, playing the right way defensively, committing to defense and our structure, and also just being able to build the game and feel like it's obviously 60 minutes isn't an extremely long time, but at the same time, understanding that if you get down a goal in the first 5 minutes, you don't change the way you play. You just keep playing the same way and believe that, the game plan and the structure that you have in place is what's over that 60 minutes going to get you back into that game. So for us, obviously, we'll look at things Vancouver does and differently than Edmonton and have a plan set out that way. But also, we just want to make sure we're in the right place ourselves and as a team are ready to go.
Great stuff, Josh. We appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this, and good luck against Vancouver.
Awesome. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks so much, Josh.
Josh Morrissey, that was done yesterday morning from Vancouver. Join us on the Big Show. Interesting stuff there about not only Tucker Poolman, but defensive system and, of course, playing Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid getting the forecheck on him and putting that pass out to Draisaitl. But other than that, I thought he played Connor McDavid pretty good.
Sometimes when I'm watching the guys skate, like I think, you know, I've played hockey since I was five, for 45 years I've played hockey. And, you know, every once in a while you come across a guy whose speed is impressive, right? I've never played real high level for sure, and just like beer league now. But, you know, even at that level, there's to try and understand NHL speed, I know I can't do that. I can't understand how fast they are. And every once in a while I'll be on the ice with, you know, playing alumni from the Habs. I did with the Stonewall Kinsmen this past year. And you'll see little spurts or like against a guy like Bernie Nichols who can still dangle pretty, like things like that in the Battle of the Badges. Every once in a while you'll get a glimpse of what it would be like. And it's just enough to go, in their prime, I can't imagine. And then you watch an NHL game and you try and understand. And it's all relative. So that takes away from having a profound understanding of it. But man, I wish that Josh Morrissey could describe to the very best possible way to tell us, like, what is it like to have Connor McDavid bearing down on you? I will never forget ever watching that highlight in that game against Calgary, guys, when Brody is off the blue line, they're in the offensive zone, and Connor McDavid starts to wheel at about the faceoff dot, and there, Brody, off the blue line already, turns knowing that he's completely effed with McDavid's 25 feet away from him. I can't, like, what is that for speed, man?
I'll tell you what it's like. You're just like, he got lucky. He got lucky. I can take that.
Like, for an NHL player, right, who can skate in the one or a half a percentile of guys that, like, to know that you're screwed when the guy's 20 and just starting to wheel and you go, uh-oh, and you turn and you just, yeah. And and it wasn't enough, right? McDavid blew by him anyway. What is that speed? Like, comparable to light? I don't know.
Yeah, I like the fact that the two best players in the game right now, in Crosby and McDavid, could not be any more different in how they play the game. Like, it's that's so bizarre. Like, generally, there's kind of a template for success.
Huh.
But they're just so 180-degree different when you watch how they each kind of attack offensively and how they play the game and how their mind, like, they both see the game at a different level, which is what makes McDavid so impossible. When you have a hockey sense that's in the one percentile all time from people that have ever played the game.
That's what Scheifele commented on, too, in his piece with the Players Tribune, right? It's that deadly killer speed along with a deadly killer hockey brain.
And I like what he said, too, how when he first watched McDavid, it was, he is genetically different than it. Like, he must have been created in a lab. This is not human, what we're seeing on the ice.
Right?
Yeah.
Your thoughts on Morrissey's comments, your thoughts on the Dustin Bufflin, Matt Hendricks fishing picture, your thoughts on Connor Hellebuck getting the start tonight for the Jets on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day, that and anything else, anything and everything on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki, weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Back on the Big Show with the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. An extended afternoon ride, 3 till 7 with Huss and Rick Ralph. 7 o'clock, an extended Manitoba Building Trades pregame show with Kevin Olszewski and friends. Jets and Canucks with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns on the call at 9 o'clock tonight on 1290. And then the Huron Windows postgame show with Olszewski and friends on the Boss Pizza Fan Line open then as well. It's open right now. Does a fishing picture from Dustin Bufflin and Matt Hendricks, while they're both injured, bother you? And if so, why? The Jets and Canucks, your thoughts on tonight's game. Connor Hellebuck gets the start. We'll talk about that. If you want to give us who you're taking in the Eagles and the Panthers tonight as week 6 of the National Football League kicks off. And Matt Nichols is getting adjusted to his glove. It looks like he'll play on Saturday versus the BC Lions. Would you rest Bombers if they solidify a playoff spot. One of the things we were discussing today as well. Anything and everything on the Boss Pizza fan line, or you can text us. 1290-90, standard message rates applying. 780-1290. Kevin, you're kicking us off this morning on the big show. Go ahead.
Good morning. It's a two-part. First, I was at one of those, I guess, charity events, and I got to skate on the ice with Larry Robinson once and Theo Fleury on a second time. Larry Robinson was fast. Theo Fleury, I was at the center ice. He started behind the net. By the time I got to the blue line on the other side, he was already past me. Yeah. But I think for Troy, I have a comparison for Troy so that you know what it feels like to see Connor McDavid barreling down on you.
Okay.
It would be like you kicking a field goal and having Bobby Jurison coming through an open line getting a free shot at you.
Huh. I don't think that's comparable. But,
well, I mean, you're talking, you've got 3 seconds before this guy turns you into mincemeat, and you've got less than 2 seconds for Connor McDavid to get around you. I would give that a decent comparison, but I would also, just as a quick note, who do you guys feel is the best defenseman in the league? Because I was actually thinking this in my head while I was waiting online. Who is the best defenseman in the NHL that you think could give Connor McDavid a really, I guess, close-knit, you know, day-in, day-out, would be the best guy, I guess, pound for pound to compete with Connor McDavid as far as the defenseman goes. Oh, I'd like to hear your answer.
Yeah, shut him down. To me, when you're talking skater, it's a no-brainer for Erik Karlsson.
Yeah.
I actually would love to watch that. If that ever developed where, okay, Erik Karlsson's job is to shadow and shut down Connor McDavid, my God, would that be a poetic brilliance to watch.
Yeah, that's the matchup you have to see. I think Duncan Keith, skating wise, is probably
the snarly thing.
He's
too.
Probably yeah. Erik Karlsson's equal when it comes to skating. Huh. But even like Drew Doughty last year, and Drew Doughty is in everyone's top five in terms of defensemen in the NHL. And McDavid turned him inside out and brutalized him. Like I just don't know if it matters. No human being can skate that fast. So how do you stop that? Is the question? I think Karlsson might be the only guy that would even consider gapping up against McDavid. And even then, he's going to give him, you know, the utmost amount of respect as he comes into the offensive zone.
I definitely Karlsson, but I would also love to see or watch a Doughty or a Brent Burns, because I think they'd bring that physical aspect to it. I think they'd try to wear him down a little bit more than Karlsson. So there's two different dynamics to that, but I'd love anytime Karlsson and McDavid would go at each other for 60 minutes, it'd be very interesting to watch.
I think McDavid would eat Burns' lunch. To me, it's the old, you can't hit what you can't catch. I think good luck hitting him. Sure. It's got Gretzky-esque in that manner, right? In his prime, you're going to go hit Gretzky. Well, you can try to hit Gretzky. But McDavid is, like, Gretzky's speed wasn't even the thing, right? But he had the awareness, but with the speed of McDavid.
Are we talking one-on-one, or are we talking in the zone? Like, if you're checking him. Like, they gain the zone, and You're the guy checking him.
Well, it's not even they gain the zone. It's going to have to be they're down low in the zone and he's standing stationary. But even the first 2-3 steps, like, that's just to negotiate that, to get a lick on him, right? Like, the only time we've seen McDavid get smucked, really, is lose his edge and go into the boards at this point in time, no?
Yeah, he got smucked yesterday in practice. Oscar
Kleffbaum didn't, yeah.
Ran him into the
That's a way to be popular with the organization.
I love Kleffbaum's. I mean, most teammates would go, "Oh man, are you okay?" But Kleffbaum was like, "Uh-oh,
yeah, oh yeah,
did
no
I just
kidding.
Get traded?"
Yeah. No kidding.
Great stuff, Kevin. We appreciate the call. Thanks for weighing in. 780-1290 on the Boss Pizza fan line. Andy, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. How's it going today?
Good. How are you?
Great. Just looking at that picture of that fish. It's massive.
That's awesome. A big fish.
It's a big fish. Love it. I mean, I don't have a problem with them fishing if it's their day off. I mean, what else are you going to do all day in Vancouver? Either go golfing or catch fish, I guess.
Yeah, that's the question. I mean, the issue I have with, I guess, well, Troy has an issue with it, and anybody else who does is, like, I don't think he goes if it's at any risk to do it. I don't think Matt Hendricks goes if it's at any risk. I think they went and got their treatment. I think
can we have a conversation about this, though?
Like, yeah, I just want to emphasize this is we don't know if he was sitting in the boat watching Matt fish. We don't know
let's
if he was actually
fishing,
catching.
Though.
Okay, let's assume he's fishing.
So, and everyone, think about this. Anyone that has suffered a muscle injury, soft tissue injury, so maybe it's tendon, ligament, muscle, soft tissue, and you are standing in a river and you're fishing for lunkers. Like, we're talking – and you know what? I don't even care, like, if it's a small – if you're going smallmouth bass fishing or you're throwing flies out there for trout, but they're going for big lunkers. If you've got a soft – anyone out there that's ever had a strained anything, if you have to engage your body in a manner to battle a sturgeon, I don't understand. Someone would need to explain to me how you wouldn't feel that in your sore muscle or sore soft tissue. I don't understand how that can happen.
Can I ask
it leads to me to think that there is no injury.
Can I ask why we assume that he's doing something that he shouldn't be? Like, why do we assume that a guy, even Hendricks, who's injured and went in and got treatment, is going to go run out and do something that he shouldn't be? Why are we not assuming that he must be healthy enough to go fishing?
Well, it doesn't make sense to me. Having a lit, like, all kinds of lower body things, and anytime if you slipped a little bit, right? If you had a strained anything and you slipped a little bit, that brings your core and everything activates, and it would always kind of tweak, or you'd feel the whatever soft tissue was injured. It makes me think, like, someone would have to just tell me. Because my imagination can't wrap around how you might be injured if you go and do something like that.
I understand the optics of it coming out. Like, to me, the fishing company tweeted this out, obviously for the promo. So when they're doing that, I would assume that the fishing company said, yeah, come on down. We'll take you out. Don't worry about it. Can we take a picture? And they said, yeah, and Hendricks retweets it. To me, I understand the optics of it. If I'm Dustin Buffett or Matt Hendricks, I'm like, what does this cost for the day? $3,000, here you go, and no, don't take a picture. But I have no problem with them actually going and doing it.
Yeah, I have one more comment about the goaltending.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, I think Hellebuck should be playing tonight. And I remember Al Arbour back in the day, he was a pretty good coach. He used to let who was ever winning keep playing until they lost, and then they'd switch up from Chico Resch to Billy Smith, from Billy Smith to Chico Resch. I think... let the hot goaltender play all the time until he shows otherwise.
Agreed. I agree.
And we had the open discussion, like Troy said earlier, if they're playing poorly or if they're playing well and lose, like, does that weigh into it at all? That's the other interesting aspect of it. But, I mean, he played, you know, that's reaching a bit with this case because Connor Hellebuck played really well. And he got the win. So I am a little surprised, though. I just thought that they would... tap Mason. I'm not shocked because he played very well, and I understand the heightenedness of this season of wanting to every point matters. I just naturally assumed, given the history of goaltending, that they just would go back to Mason.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised. I was surprised more so when Steve Mason was signed, and it was just basically he was anointed the starter, period, end of story. Well, of course he's a starter. They signed him for X million of dollars. I heard that sort of that narrative for a little bit. But to me, when Connor Hellebuck, if he's your organizational goaltender that they're hoping, and he has a bit of a bump year last year, you bring in a guy like Steve Mason who had an off year, you got a guy like Connor Hellebuck who had an off year, ultimately you want Connor Hellebuck to grab the throne here and run with it. Why not? Like, I'm right there with what Andy was saying there. You come in, you play well, you move forward, you keep playing. And, you know, it's Steve Mason. It was almost like it was a mercy sort of pull. I do not believe Steve Mason was removed because he wasn't playing well. It was almost just, okay, let's gather ourselves here. But you don't want him losing confidence in a gong show in front of him. And then they're able to respond. Hellebuck plays well. And now I would suspect, like, if he plays well tonight, I see no reason in the world why he won't be in there again on Saturday.
Thanks for the call, Andy. We appreciate it. 780-1290. More of your calls coming up. Your thoughts on the Bufflin and the fishing and the Hendricks and the picture?
Well, I don't have a problem with players going fishing on their day off if you're healthy. Like you can't just stay cooped up in your hotel room 24/7 or cooped up wherever. But if you're injured, the optics don't look very good at all. And I kind of like to think of it in a way of, you know, comparing it to a home situation. And say your significant other says, I need you to clean up today. And you tell them, I can't. I got an injury. I'm too hurt to clean up. And then they find a picture of you fishing an hour later. How do you think that's going to go over?
Well, I mean, to me, it's like you call in sick for work, but at 7 a.m. But by 7 p.m., you're feeling better, and you go out for dinner, and somebody sees
but
you.
But he's not feeling better because he's not playing today.
He's feeling. But why do we assume he's not good enough to fish?
Jim, when you catch a big fish, like if you've got soft tissue,
I've fished it just before. Makes I understand think, what it takes to reel in a big fish. We don't know what the injury is, and I don't understand why we're just assuming that he did this.
It's described as soft tissue.
Tissue could be anything.
Well, sure, it can be anything, and it's in his lower body. I don't understand, you know, having a litany of things having dealt with, and the way I don't know what you could. To me, it's really hard for me to believe that he's injured. Ultimately, it doesn't make sense. What could you have tweaked, right? What could you have tweaked that you wouldn't feel engaged when you're hauling in a monster sturgeon? It doesn't make sense to me, man.
But what I don't understand, if we're going to go to the conspiracy theory of he's not injured, then you'd be practicing. If you're not playing well and you're being a healthy scratch and we want to cover it up, you're not going to not practice to not get better. So I don't buy into that at all. I think he's banged up.
Well, you wouldn't
I think
be practicing
he went fishing.
If the public is being told you're injured, you wouldn't practice, right?
Yes, but why wouldn't you practice if you're just if you're healthy and you're not playing well?
Yeah, I'm just saying it all adds up.
Like to
up,
me, not practicing doesn't make you better if you're struggling on the ice in a game.
It just all adds up to making not much sense to me. And I truly, you know, in dealing with and being pretty tuned into my body for whatever level the CFL is for 18 years, and I just don't know what you could have wrong with you that keeps you off the ice, and it's being described as a soft tissue issue, and then you're going out walking in unstable situation like a river and wrestling sturgeons. It doesn't make sense to me.
Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780. Oh, we got to take a break. Phil and Brett and everybody else, if you can hang on, we'll get to your phone calls next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day, Jets and Canucks tonight on TSN 1290 at 9 o'clock. Full pre- and post-game coverage as well. Back to the Boston Pizza fan line with Jim, Troy, and Brandon, 780-1290. Phil, you're on the show. Go ahead.
Good morning, fellas. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. Wanted to talk about this Buff thing and the whole fishing thing real quick. I don't think it looks as bad as on Buff as it does on the franchise. I think it's a poor... The optics are terrible. Regardless if he's hurt or they're benching him, the fact that they, not necessarily allowing him to do this because they're obviously adults and grown men and they can do as they please, but I think that as an organization, they need to be more cognizant of what the optics look like to the fan base and to the public and to the media, and I think that it's poor judgment on their part. Again, regardless if he's injured or they're benching him for other reasons, I think that, again, that's the main piece. It looks bad on the franchise, more so than it does look like that on Buff. And I think that's something that this team does every so often. It has they lack judgment sometimes. And this is this exemplifies that. I think that's a problem. And, that's what my personal opinion is. And I'm curious what you guys' thoughts are on just purely the optics piece, not so much the reason as to why they're there. So I'll hang up and I'll listen to your response. Thanks.
I don't think the optics are... So if he's seen on the Vancouver seawall having a cold one with a couple of his teammates, I mean, I know there's no physical activity involved in that, and I don't... I mean, what's people's thoughts on Matt Hendricks, who is literally on the injured reserve list doing it?
It's not good either.
Yeah, and to me, it's on the... You know, it doesn't shine poorly on the organization to me at all. They're put in a tough situation where they have to cover it, and you know that's it, right? Like ideally, as an organization, you'd be like, guys, come on, just next time, maybe ixnay on the picture and just go have your fun. But just because they're putting the or and specifically or more so Buff because he's, you know, just the situation play
injured, not playing anymore. Hendricks was out from the start. So this is all the attention here really is on Byfuglien. And you just, to me as a player, you got to be mindful of what could possibly put your organization in a difficult situation, the PR department specifically, right? And that, so that's the organization's getting that thrown at them. It's not their problem. I don't think they're handling it poorly at all.
Thanks for the call, Phil. Brett, you're on the big show, 780-1290, Boss Pizza Fan Line. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Appreciate the show. Listen to it daily. Just had a couple questions about the blue and gold here. Since Michael Shea and Matt Nichols have kind of come aboard and kind of turning the ship around these last couple of years here, you can see some additions in depth, especially Canadian depth, stuff that, you know, we're not accustomed to. I'm very, very interested just to kind of hear what you guys' thoughts are. This is one of the first times we've, you know, had that starting quarterback, knock on wood, that, you know, he's playing through some of these injuries, that he hasn't gone down, and seeing Dominic Davis kind of some of these flashes. Like, normally a second string quarterback, especially that hasn't really had much game time, doesn't really stick around. So obviously they have some trust in this guy, and just kind of what your thoughts are if the QB chart as we head down the stretch here.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not so sure how much faith they have in Dominic Davis. I'm surprised that he's in the second spot in front of Dan LeFevre, and I expressed that in detail. Just you know, Dan LeFevre has won games. I thought in a lot of ways he is somewhat similar to Matt Nichols to me. He's a physical specimen. He's got a nice arm. He's a little bit of a renegade or a cowboy out there, and easily reeled in by Paul Apolice. I think what we're seeing right now with Dom Davis is a little bit more so maybe, hey, this is your third year here, and it's time for you to either blossom or for us to maybe grab someone else to develop. But the interesting thing to me here is, can you really bring in a quarterback that you're looking to develop when you got Matt Nichols, who's 30 years old and has a solid 4 or 5 years left to play at this level that he's grown into under Paul Apolice? And then you got Dan LeFevre, who's 30 years old. To me, the perfect complement of a backup quarterback to Matt Nichols, possibly. So I think this is more them taking a look and sort of measuring just where exactly Dom Davis is at. But I agree with you, man. It has been a long, long time since the Bombers have been this solidified at that spot, and it looks like for a handful of years to come.
Yeah, and Dom Davis spoke yesterday after practice just about, you know, nothing equates game reps and every snap and stuff like that. Michael Shea was asked about why emphatically saying that Dom Davis is the number two, and he said, well, just he is. It's the way training camp and everything else played out. So it was a decision made after training camp, and going forward, he said that's just where we have him seated.
In the exhibition games, I sure didn't think that was the case, man. I thought LeFevre made a heck of a strong case in exhibition.
Thanks for the call, Brett. Back to the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Let's squeeze Alan.
Al, you're on the big show. Go ahead. Hi, Al. All right, we got to take a break anyways. We'll get to more of your calls when we come back on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Canucks tonight at 9. This is the big show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca, Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Of course, Jets and Canucks tonight at 9 p.m. on the station. Extended afternoon ride, 3 till 7. Extended Manitoba Building Trades pregame show, 7 till 9. Game at 9 with Paul Edmonds, Brian Munns, and the Huron Windows postgame show as well. We also have some tickets to give away. The Moose home opener tomorrow night at Bell MTS Place. And the Bombers and the Lions. We'll give you a pair of tickets to that later in the program as well, so stay tuned. Back to the Boss Pizza Fan Line with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki, 780-1290. Chad, you're on the program. Go ahead, Chad.
Thanks, fellas. Just a quick comment on the this whole, fish gate thing.
Fish gate. See, this is... never mind. Go ahead.
So not all injuries are created equal. So, and everybody has different pain tolerance and healing tolerance for their body. So who knows? You know, it was almost a year ago today. I had pretty invasive, severe foot surgery. I was given a 8 to 10 week healing time. in a walking boot for the first week. I asked the doctor at the time, should I stay off it? And he said, absolutely not. I said, well, what about hunting and what about fly fishing, because I like to be in the water and slippering? And he said, no big deal. He said, you have to be on it as much as possible. So, yeah, it hurt a bit, but, I mean, being on your feet was important. So who knows what Buff and Matt were told as far as how severe their injuries were, if they needed to stay off it. I'm sure they have the best doctors around, and if they were told not to do something, they probably wouldn't do it. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt on this. It seems, I get the how it looks, you know, from the PR standpoint, but perhaps if the general public, and I include myself in that, just exercises some common sense, they realize this really isn't that big of a deal.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I don't know. I don't think it's a big deal unless it becomes a big deal where it affects him playing. Now, as Brandon said, he's not playing tonight, but somebody else sent out me a tweet. I think he's just a doctor who plays one on Twitter. He's not an actual doctor, but he says, if you pull your groin, you could easily fish, but you couldn't skate or risk damaging
it
better.
No, you couldn't. You cannot. Are you kidding me? You think if you have a pulled groin, you can go stand in a river and fish for 300-pound sturgeon, and you lock into one, and then you're battling a sturgeon, and you're like, no, you can't, man.
The whole thing is we don't know. We don't know if you can or not.
That's the example being used.
Every pulled groin
is
the exact same?
Jim, I've had several. No,
he could have tweaked his groin.
Stop
it. No. Why stop it?
Because you can't be out there in that situation, Jim. I'd call any physiotherapist, any doctor. If you have any tweaked groin whatsoever, for instance, there's no way in the world the internal pressure that's created when you're trying to haul in and battle a sturgeon like that, there's no freaking way, man. It's impossible that you're not going to do damage and feel it in a negative way in that situation.
I got to be honest, speculating what the injury is and then speculating that he shouldn't be doing something he did to me is the ridiculous part.
Well, you just asked me a question about having a pulled groin doing it.
And why do we assume that both he and Matt Hendricks should not be fishing with these injuries, and they went and did it anyways, and now the organization has a big issue? I don't get where this is coming from. They went fishing. I don't think Dustin Byfuglien or Matt Hendricks sits there and goes, there's a chance we could be screwing the team on this, but we're going to do it anyway. And then we're going to tweet a picture out about it.
Yeah, I'm not.
It doesn't make sense.
Saying
to me.
That I agree, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that you could be injured and doing that. So there's a bunch of this stuff that doesn't really make sense.
Chad, anything else? Okay, we'll go to the Boss Pizza fan line some more. 780-1290. Tim, you're on the program. Go ahead. Hi, Tim. All right, try again, Tim. We'll go to Dan. Dan, you're on the program. Go ahead. Dan, try again. Al, are you there?
Yes, sir.
All right, Al. Give it to us, baby.
All right. So I'm going to start off by saying, you know, it's great when you have an engaged and passionate fan base. However, when it comes to the players, who cares what happens off the ice? They're grown adults. They're not accountable to you as a fan. They're accountable to Chevy and Paul Maurice. So, you know, if Dustin Byfuglien is in Vancouver, they have a couple days off. You know what? Sturgeon fishing is kind of a Byfuglien thing to do when he's off. I mean, let's think about it here, right? So he decides to go fishing. Great. He's got tons of money. He's got tons of time. Do it. It's his personal life. We as fans should have no worries about what happened. If he gives up 5 goals and he doesn't pivot properly and keeps taking done penalties, then, yeah, harp on him for that. But don't harp him on what he's doing in his spare time.
It's because he's injured, though. Like, that's the difference here, right, Al?
Yeah, but at the same time, like, again, it's in the realm of who cares. I think it's a bigger deal if it comes out and, you know, he's fighting that sturgeon and for some reason he broke his wrist because the rod went flying. Then it's a different story.
But I don't think it's their time away. And these guys are smart. They're accountable to themselves. If Dustin Byfuglien really cares about, you know, if he manages risks the way he feels fit, I'm pretty sure he won't go skydiving during the season.
Well, and the other part about this is, like, Matt Hendricks is literally on the injured reserve list. And Matt Hendricks has a minimal contract, and it's a one-year deal, and he has yet to play for this team. I don't think he risks hurting himself more given the career situation he's in. I just don't. And if he is, and if he does, then I will call him the dumbest man on the planet. But I don't assume he's doing that. I don't think he's doing that. I think he's smart enough to know that I have a one-year deal at a minimal contract late in my career, and I've yet to play for this team. I don't think he goes, I'm still going to try and do this, and hopefully I don't injure myself more. I don't think that way. And if I'm wrong, I'll admit it. But I don't think that's what's going on with either of these players.
Just, it adds up to, it's just interesting stuff to me, man. And it's, and no matter how you slice and dice it, to me, the bottom line here is, if you are on the injured list, if this was any other sports, Gold Eyes, Bombers, any other, if Odell Beckham Jr. was injured and had to miss a game, and he tweeted out, there's a picture of him fishing for big sturgeon, you'd get the same sort of commentary. When you're on an injured list as a pro athlete, it's a dumb thing to do, I believe, tweeting out. And it doesn't matter if only half the people think it's dumb or if half the people question it as a fan base, then it's from a PR move standpoint, the organization is not going to like it. So it's a dumb thing to do. Do whatever you want in your own time. When you're on the injured list, it's just not a wise thing to do from a PR standpoint to tweet out such a picture. That really is the bottom line, right? That's going to lead to all kinds of speculation, and it riles up a fan base.
To your point, the New York Giants are still hearing about this picture on a boat during their off week,
because
they haven't won a game since that picture was taken, and they're wondering if they should be doing this in their off week. But I still think, I get why it's a story. I still think it's the most ridiculous story ever. Do I think that the New York Giants lost a game the following week or haven't won a game since because they went down to Florida and got on a boat with Justin Bieber? No. I understand the optics of it, but I also understand that even though those optics are out there, I'm not going to not live my life. I'm not going to not go on a vacation because people might think we're losing games because I went on a vacation.
Straight up to me, what makes it a raised eyebrow is the whole coincidence of Buff playing the way he was and then coming up with an injury that nobody saw occur on the ice seemed a little coincidental. So you go, I wonder if he's hurt or if this is a healthy scratch that they're presenting to the public so it doesn't cause a big firestorm and they're just saying he's injured. And then this picture comes out to further make you go, is he injured? That's the driving thing here to me. It's a little bit weird. And no matter how you slice and dice it, there's not a PR of a pro team out there, a PR group of a pro team out there or management that wouldn't go, we should stay away from that. If you're on the edge, let's not tweet out pictures of us being involved in anything recreational whatsoever when we're on the injured list. That's just good, smart business from that standpoint.
Let's go to the phones.
We'll go to the Boss Pizza fan line then. Who's next?
Dave.
Dave, you're on the program. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Listening to all this, it just shows me the character of Byfuglien. It seems like he does whatever he wants off the ice, doesn't care what anybody thinks, and the way he plays on the ice sort of shows the same thing. I think that he's not the player for Winnipeg. I think Trouba's in the shadow of him. I think it would benefit to trade Byfuglien. Trouba would probably feel better being the number one. He might, if anybody had any doubts in his head that he wants to leave here, that might shore up him staying here without Byfuglien. I mean, we're short a few players to make our lines. Why not trade Byfuglien? Like, when a Matt Duchene or somebody look good here? That's just my opinion, guys. I'll listen to your comments. Thanks.
And that sort of, like, to me, guys, that take by Dave is represented in X percentage of the fan base out there, and that is precisely why I don't tweet out such a picture. It just leads to all this sort of speculation talk. It doesn't help anybody. And don't do such a thing. Learn a lesson here as players, and you just don't do stuff like that when you're on the injured reserve.
Thanks for the call, Dave, and the opinion. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Yeah, we'll get Jonathan to hang on, but we'll go to Tim here.
Tim, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. Listen, I think this whole optics thing, it's only there as we look through our own goofy glasses. But I got on a good source, okay? I know this guy who knows a girl who knows somebody who's related to Bufflin who says he took a puck in the ankle. It's a little swelled up. He can't put his skate on, so Jets told him he can't play. Now, Bufflin, to his credit, said, can I go home and read books all day? And the Jet doctors told him, no, man, you got to get in the river and cool it down, bring down the swelling. Why don't you go fishing for 3 hours? So we can bring this all to rest. It's all good, man. Troy, I appreciate you're an ex-pro athlete, but you're not the only guy who's ever had an injury or played through an injury. I think you're peaking too early. Let's all just let it go. It's all good. Go, Jets, go.
Thanks for the call, Tim.
That would be an injury. That wouldn't be affected by such a thing, yeah. Got a bruise, swelled ankle from a blast of a puck, sure.
At least we got it settled. That's good.
Any story in my whole career as a journalist for 20-plus years, if I had a dime every time somebody said, I got a friend whose sister, who, but I appreciate it, Tim. Because literally, that's how you get some sources. That's good stuff. Appreciate the call, Tim. Jonathan, you're on the big show. Go ahead. Johnny? No?
Let's go to Bob.
Bob, you're on the big show. Go ahead, Bob.
Hey, I can tell you for a fact, you can go fishing if you got a groin injury, a broken foot, or a strained calf. Because I've done all three, and I'll tell you, the one that's the most painful was the strained calf. So you can do it. I've done it. The only danger I got in was maybe damaging my elbow. That was about all. So you can play. I don't know. I think it's just a conspiracy theory. This is almost like out of Breitbart News. If he's injured, he's injured. I don't think it's that serious. I'm more concerned is that he comes into camp every year, and I just don't believe he's in game shape. Because the first 20 games he plays atrocious, and he plays pretty good his last 20. So
man, he looked good this year in camp, though. He looked svelte, trim, in shape.
And Paul Maurice told us on the big show at the first day of camp when we were out at Bell MTS Iceplex that every year that Paul Maurice has been here, he's tested better at the opening of training camp, and this year was the best he's ever tested.
Yep.
So... all right, we got to take a break, but we'll get to more of your calls. Please feel free. You can text 1290 with standard message rates applying and give us a shout at 780-1290 on The Big Show with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. More of you next on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
.780-1290 on the Boss Pizza Fan Line with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. We'll get to as many calls as we can on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Canucks tonight on TSN 1290 live at 9 p.m. Brent, you're on the show. Go ahead, Brent.
How's it going this morning, boys?
Good. How are you?
Oh, no, I'm glad we got it settled what's going on with Buff because it was really eating up a lot of time on the show. I was just, there's a lot of people talking about trading Bufflin. I'm just curious who they're going to trade him to since he has a no-movement clause. I just need to remind everybody of that until, July 1st it goes to a modified no-movement clause, 14-team or something like that. Am I right?
I think that's not until 18-19.
But I think it's two more seasons, yeah. Like Troy's saying.
Yeah. Could be, yeah. I'm not sure. I'm just pretty sure that... he's going to be here for, unless you put him up on forward and see if he gets frustrated that he waves his no-move clause, but I don't see how that's probably going to happen.
It's next year a 14-team no-trade list can submit.
Yeah, so I think we can quit dreaming about Matt Duchene here and for this year, so... I just wanted to comment on that Buff isn't going anywhere.
As Brandon pointed out yesterday, like the Avalanche don't want a 30-plus-year-old player, regardless of who he is. They want youth, and they're rebuilding. They're not going to bring in 7-point-some. I agree with that. I think that's
a youth thing. So I'm just shocked nobody has called in to say, I will take you guys fishing for the day on the house. We'll see how much it takes, and then we'll tweet photos out about it just to get the live like, who doesn't
I'll
fishing?
I'll pull my groin. Westy can sprain his ankle, and you can work something with a knee, and we'll figure out which lower body
Let's
injury
put this
doesn't
to the test.
Get affected.
Investigative reporting. Who wants to take the Big Show fishing?
Anyone, if they've got a pulled groin or a strained calf like the guy called in, if you're going to wrestle a 500-pound fish, whatever that is, and if you don't think that you're going to be hurting that strain, you're foolish. You guys are out to lunch. Anyone that thinks that is out to lunch.
But soft tissue, as a caller brought up, could be he took a shot. He can't put his skate on. They don't want him to, and he could fish, and then this is all for naught.
That's true enough, yep.
Brent, thanks for the call. Ron, you're on the program. Go ahead. Oh, turn that radio down, Ron.
Oh, sorry, guys.
That's okay.
Got me. I thought it was Cosmic Bob for a sec, man.
Yeah, I haven't heard that guy
in a
while.
Not for a long time.
I hope he's doing okay.
Hope you're well, Bob.
So I'm not necessarily going to talk about the injury. I just want to talk about heart and dedication and the whole bit. And you talk about Scheifele and how much of a rink rat he is and how much he loves being, you know, he loves playing hockey. The way I look at Buff is he looks at hockey as being a job, not necessarily about what he loves to do. It's a job for him. He's good. Like, you know, when I say he's good at it, he's been a really decent player going, in the past and not so much. Well, I don't want to say he's not a good player right now. I'm just saying that I think it's all in the head for him. But the fact of the matter is he looks at hockey as being a job, and everything else, and especially fishing, is what he enjoys the most. And that's why I think that he'll never show that the hockey is number one for him. It'll always be secondary to everything else in life. And that's the way I look at him. And I know that this is a contract that you probably can't trade, and you got to go move forward with it and just go on. And that's my comments, and you guys can weigh in if you'd like. Have a good one.
Thanks, Ron.
Hey, man, the more guys you can get, more guys and gals that you can get in a locker room, clubhouse, name your sport, where they live, eat, and breathe that sport, the better off you're going to be.
Let's try and squeeze in Jeff quickly.
Jeff, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Question for you. It seems like when guys are injured, you know, they're wearing jerseys that they can't be in contact, and they're also must have some kind of guidance from their staff as to what you can do when you work out, what you can't push, what you can do. I'd kind of be blown away that there isn't some kind of impact from the team as to what these guys can actually do with their bodies. And question for you, is Bufflin out for tonight 100%? I didn't hear that, or could he actually play tonight? Because I guess if he played, this fishing thing might go to bed pretty quick, because there's probably no chance of injury because he's good to go.
No, Paul Maurice said yesterday after their practice at UBC that he will skate for the first time this morning on the morning skate, but he will not play tonight. They're going to sort of test it, see how it feels, but he will not play.
Yeah, it's interesting playing a lot of sports and at a high level. You know, there's always seems to be guidance of you know, you can't do this. If you work out, you can't. You have an operation, you can't bend this way. Like, it seems odd that a professional athlete wouldn't be knowing exactly what he can push his body to do.
Oh, he probably is.
But I agree with Troy that
they were for sure telling that.
Definitely not what I'd be doing.
And having played at a very low-end sport where they're just like, we don't care. You can go or you can't. We'll find somebody else.
That's the bottom line to me here. Mm-hmm. Whatever. Just don't make it public that you're doing that, because you're just putting the organization in a tough spot.
Thanks for the call, Jeff, and thanks for all the calls on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. We appreciate you listening and taking part. We want to let you know that we have two tickets, the Bombers and the Lions, Saturday, October the 14th, this Saturday at IGF, 780-1290. And we also have a pair of tickets to the Moose home opener against the Cleveland Monsters tomorrow, Friday the 13th, against the Monsters at Bell MTS Place.
two tickets to that as well, 780-1290. Once again, Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. The afternoon ride with Huss and Rick Ralph is 3 till 7. Olszewski has the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show, 7 till 9. Puck drop is at 9, Jets Canucks. And then the Huron Windows postgame show on TSN 1290. Kevin Olszewski with the Don Vito Roundtable at 11. We'll have the latest on the lineup and everything else coming out of the pregame skate for the Jets and the Canucks. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening, and we'll do it again tomorrow morning on The Big Show at 6 a.m. right here on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.